love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented Tony.
He's got a puke. He's got a yeah, he's got a puke.
And Alex.
I got a big fat wife and 9 kids at home, and I gotta feed them.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. Episode 181, where we talk all things comics for the week of February 15th, 2017. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
I have a special announcement.
You gay?
No. No, it's good news.
Oh?
Not that being gay would be bad news. I went to the pharmacy today to pick up prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've talked about before, I am a type 1 diabetic. So my insulin's very expensive, but I have insurance. And my insurance has cost $150 per.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
So to get both of my insulins, it's $300 a month, and I already pay something like $640 a month for insurance.
No buys.
So I was really upset about my work insurance. However, I went in to pay today, and it was free, no charge. And I found out they had a prescription deductible on the plan, but it was a $300 one. So I met it, and now all my prescriptions are free, all of them. So that's pretty exciting.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
This is an opposite, by the way, to the 1 month I had a Obamacare health insurance, and I had a $2,200 insurance deductible. So I would have had to pay over $2,000 before they covered anything. Yeah.
Figure if I'm going to hang back, I'll just play some drops, right?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's all good.
All right. I feel like we killed enough time. Let's go into our first segment this week. News. Okay, I'm going to run an experiment right here. Alex, have you heard that song before?
Yes.
Okay, remember I asked you earlier, you said, is Daft Punk still a thing? And I told you, I'm sure you've heard them, you just probably weren't paying attention to who wrote the song. So there you go.
Well,
you have in fact heard the new Daft Punk. And by new Daft Punk, I mean Daft Punk from 2013. What is
this? Yeah, they don't sound like the Daft Punk we had when I was in high school.
No.
So that would be why I was unaware. I apologize.
I was just floored. You were like, oh, is Daft Punk still a thing? I'm like,
I don't. Okay, here's the thing. I'm into indie music. I have been since high school. Mm-hmm. And a long time ago, I stopped listening to the radio. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I don't have cable. I download everything.
Well, I'm saying there's certain songs that even if you don't listen to the radio, there's
no escaping. If you watch a show, they don't say who did the song.
Yeah, but I said you've heard of this song before. I can guarantee it.
Well, you were right on that. But
and in fact, here's the comic book connection. Like this, because in the Longshot book, both Tony and Reed were in their little van. They were listening to that song. Reed was like, ooh, I like this song. He's like, who's it by? He's like, and then Tony comes back. He's like, you're kidding. The song's been everywhere. How have you never heard this song before?
Well, he just said, who's it by? He didn't necessarily not know the song.
I know, but it's between you and Reed living in caves, not knowing.
Well, Reed is really busy, and it's, I don't listen to the yeah.
Yes, he never That's heard all. The song, and you didn't know who was by, even though I told you Daft Punk is, in fact, a very big deal in modern day.
Well, I knew that time, though.
Yes.
So I learned.
Well, speaking of learning, although there's not much of a connection here, speaking of turning back to the annals of time, Guardians of the Galaxy is picking up a new title with a new writer.
Five-issue mini. Mm-hmm. Jim Starlin is writing. So we can safely assume he will undo everything Bendis did with the book.
No,
particularly if it relates to Thanos.
No, specifically, I read the story and they sat down and talked to him. And they said, okay, you have to write this book with the idea that people have just seen the movie in mind. So even when it comes to Gamora, he's going to write her like she's been in the last couple of years, especially in the movie. So he's not going to write her the way she's been in the past.
He said that?
Yeah.
But I don't believe him at all. And I will probably read this because I kind of get a kick out of Starlin. Like, he's been around a long time.
He comes in and every now and then.
Yeah, like he did all those Thanos books, which the current Thanos series kind of ignores all those books and does something different. And I'm sure... I bet what he did was he came to Marvel. He's like, listen, because those books tend to sell well. Like the guy has, he still has a bit of a name for this sort of thing. And I bet he came to them and he's like, yeah, so you guys got this new Thanos book. I kind of want to write a Thanos series. And they're like, Jim, is it going to undo everything he's done? He's like, yeah, kind of. And they go, you know what? Love to have you work for us. Why don't you do a Guardians book? And he's like, okay. And he's just thinking about how he can work Thanos into it.
Well, he's already writing Pip the Troll into it.
Uh-oh. So well, he wasn't an important character in the Thanos book. He was just a talking head.
If you're including Pip, you have to imagine Thanos is not too far away.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah. But he just wants to use a character like that he wrote in the past that no one else is really using. Mm-hmm. That can
Yeah, and they have Alan Davis as the artist attached to him. They have a quote from him. They said, when did Star-Lord grow a Van Dyke? I thought that was funny. That was cute.
Alan Davis is, you know, he comes off like a less exciting Brian Hitch. Mm-hmm. That's offensive, actually. Alan Davis is a perfectly capable comic book artist who I find to be completely unexciting, but it never bothers me when he does the art. Mm-hmm. So,
yes, and the series is called Guardians of the Galaxy, Mother Entropy. It's running 5 issues, so we're going to read it. Even if it's not bad, I have to imagine we're going to read all 5 issues because it's 5 issues. And I've been saying this for a while now. More comic book companies need to do this because if you announce a continuing series, I'll read maybe 1-2 issues. And if it's not doing anything for me, I just won't read it. But if it's 5 issues and it's just okay, I'll just stick it out to the conclusion because, well, it's just 5 issues.
Yeah. No, I mean, that'll be, unless it's like atrociously bad.
Yeah, but if it's Starling and Davis, you can't imagine it's going to be that bad.
There'll be a certain level of, if not quality, at least, comfortable nostalgia.
Yes. All right. Moving on to our next story. Our boy, not necessarily a comic book character, but our boy Chip Zdarsky has landed a gigantic book.
Well, sort of. He's ended a third Spider-Man book.
Is it? It's a secondary Peter Parker Spider-Man book. It's being called Peter Parker the Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yeah, and Spectacular Spider-Man is one of the old Spider-Man series. They have to reuse adjectives now because they ran out of them for Spider-Man. They already did a lot of them, so they're like, oh, we haven't had Spectacular in a while. Let's do it. We have been fairly big fans of Zdarsky. The fact that we didn't read Star-Lord this week shouldn't say anything about that. It was just I wanted to cut some books.
And the fact that you never caught on to Sex Criminals, which he draws?
Yeah, that had nothing to do with it. In general, I like him. And Spider-Man, I think, is a good character for him because he's kind of jokey.
Yeah, if anything, this is a guarantee this is going to be a very... funny Spider-Man series. I was sort of torn because I was like, well, if you're going to go with this funny Spider-Man title, you could have gone with him or Spencer. But of the two, honestly, I like Zdarsky better.
Spencer and bigger stuff. He's writing the
big cap,
the Secret Empire or whatever it's called.
Yeah, he's busy with that. So that's
yeah, so he's not good. But I mean, you know, maybe they're giving Zdarsky something that has a little more meat to it. Like, maybe he's going to get to do some semi-serious stuff with this book?
The focus of the book is going to be Spider-Man New York.
That's Miles's gimmick.
Yeah, well, he's crediting on Miles territory. Apparently, they tried the gimmick with Miles, and they're going to keep Miles around, but this new Spectacular Spider-Man series is supposed to be focusing exclusively on Spider-Man in New York City.
Huh.
I like, let's see, there's a quote here from Zdarsky. My personal mission statement going into the book is, with great power comes something, something I don't know. I've never had power before.
But now I get to write Spider-Man, yeah. And I can do things that, you know, don't really matter because Slott's book exists.
Yeah. I wonder if this is going to lead to Zdarsky being slowly but surely replacing Slott.
No.
I've heard people complaining, but people have been complaining for a while now about Slott. And even when I met Slott, he's like, you know, eventually one day I'm not going to be writing Spider-Man anymore.
And it's not that he's bad, it's just he's been writing it for so frickin' long.
Yeah. Alright, as long as we're talking all things Spider-Man, let's talk Norman Osborn's return in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man 25 in Born Identity.
It was gonna happen eventually.
Yes.
It sounds like a Matt Damon movie.
Well, but they have the same pronunciation, but they're spelled differently.
Yeah, I guess.
And it's going to be a 96-page Spider-Man issue 25. Huge, huge book. But the thing is, the Osborn story is just going to be an exclusive 40-page story. And the rest of it is just going to be a bunch of backups.
Well, and, you know, it's, yeah, and Osborn has been, like, they showed a little bit of him at the start of the new run. And I think what might have happened was, like, he was going to do a story, and then somebody at Marvel said, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa there.
Whoa there, big fella.
That's a bust. No, somebody at Marvel probably said, hey, Norman's kind of a big deal. So if we could hold him off and then we can actually advertise it and blah, 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 blah. I bet something like that happened. Because for better or for worse, he is a big deal. Mm-hmm. He became Spider-Man's number one heel when, you know, Clone Saga was a thing.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the
like art. To pretend he was always Spider-Man's biggest villain, which he wasn't, but that's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, they have Stuart Immonen attached to the art on the Osborn Identity storyline. So, for those of you who are big art aficionados,
well, Stuart Immonen has had big name titles before. He's worked on Spider-Man before, actually. So that's fine. I have no issues.
Yeah,
and I hope it's a good story. When they build up Spider-Man stories, they tend to be good. It's just, I don't know. What else can Slott do with Spider-Man? Like, he's done everything.
Well, they're not pulling the trigger on taking the title away from Slott just yet. If they're having no announcements as far as who's running Spider-Man going forward.
No, and the other thing is the book still sells really well. It's like,
I think that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid if they put Slott or somebody else, I mean, they take Slott off the book and they put somebody else on
it. It'll stop selling.
It'll maybe hurt the sales a bit.
How long has he been on the book? Have you read that anywhere?
Slott.
Has it passed a decade yet?
I think so. Let's see. It goes back to what? Brand New Day?
Well, he's been on the book longer than anyone else at Marvel has been on a single title. Like, easily. We're not up to, like, you know, Chris Claremont 20 years yet, but it's a long time to be on a single character book.
2008. Steadily.
God, almost 10 years.
Yeah, steadily approaching a decade on the title.
That's so odd in this age to do that, but, you know, I just hope that when he finishes up, like, he does some big, huge story. But you can't really do something in Spider-Man where it's like, oh, we're going to change the status quo. Because, like, who's his supporting cast now? Spider-Man always had a great supporting cast, and he has the weak supporting cast he's had in years. Like, Anna Maria. Who else? Like, he doesn't work for Jameson anymore. So like he's in the books, but he's not central or anything. Aunt May is there, but like Aunt May was married and that took her out. Like his supporting cast is kind of crap now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you can kill a cast member and have it mean something.
No, and going forward, it's like, what can you really do to change the status quo in Spider-Man? I think if I were Slott, I would just focus on just telling really good stories and maybe have a really good story in mind for your finale. But other than that, I can't imagine him doing anything that hasn't been done so far. Then again, I'm sure people thought that before they did what they did with Superior, so you never know. Just when you think you've seen everything, they'll find a way to give you a new storyline that you never thought you'd ever see.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of them changing stuff with Spider-Man, our next news story, the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider-Man series. After the first arc, they're going back to the original Scarlet Spider costume.
The internet complained about I think what's going to happen is, because you know the story behind the original costume was, he wasn't like, he didn't have anyone to make a costume for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he just kind of threw something together. Like he had like a red body condom and then he found like a hoodie. And I don't know if he drew the spider onto it or what, but it was very quickly put together and it was supposed to look that way. But people kind of liked it. Like it looked different. The new one, like the only thing they really kept was they kept the colors, which were just Spider-Man colors anyway, and they kept the hood, but the hood didn't make any sense. So I think what's going to happen is his costume's going to get destroyed, his new costume, and then he's going to have to quickly throw something together. And he's like, well, this worked last time. I'll take a hoodie and rip the sleeves off.
And of course, when they approached Marvel, they're like, oh, the costume change isn't backtracking the creators of the book, according to Marvel. But a rather story-driven change led to Reilly going back to the hoodie.
I bet it's a story-driven change, but I bet that story wasn't created until the internet shit all over the new costume. And like, I like Mark Bagley. I didn't think the costume was bad. It's just, if you're going for like a nostalgia thing here, why not keep the fucking costume the same? Like you don't have to change it.
I know, but this is like the worst of both worlds. It's like you've decided to stick with it because, you know, the way comic books work in, you know, modern day, the idea of, well, it's, we already have our first arc already done, but I guess going forward, we're going to listen to the internet here because of Spider-Man. It's funny. They've done this before. Remember that one story when they announced that they were changing the Spider-Woman costume and everyone just crapped on it? It's like, the reason why we're not reading Spider-Woman is not because her costume. It's because the stories weren't interesting. And the idea that, oh, okay, we'll just give her a new costume and then you'll be interested. It's like everyone crapped it on CBR. But I guess because this is a much bigger deal, Scarlet Spider, all respect to Spider-Woman, which we're a big fan of, it's like in this one instance that they're going to kind of listen to the audience. And I also feel like this is also being influenced by all the Rebirth stuff. I mean, we talked about this off air, Alex. You're sort of the opinion that they didn't do that because of this. It was just from fan reaction. But you know, when DC is kicking your butt and they're doing it with a lot of nostalgia stuff, you can't help but wonder, you know, is this return back to form because of answering to something like that?
Well, the thing is, it's what DC is doing is like a long form storyline, and they haven't undone anything they did in the New 52, not yet, at least. They haven't undone it. They're just bringing stuff back that people remembered. So it's a little different. They're still doing new stuff. Marvel is more recreating the old stuff that used to work. And the problem is, the stuff they're bringing back, I'm not sure there's the affinity for it that there is for, like, DC's bringing back, like, core character concepts. They're bringing back a feeling of the old DC. Marvel is like bringing back one of the most maligned Spider-Man storylines ever.
I think this is a misinterpretation of why DC Rebirth is so successful. I think Marvel's interpreting it as, oh, people want the old stuff back, so this is what we're going to do. Because we've even seen that one poster of the Marvel Generations thing where they have the classic versions of the comic book characters paired with the new versions of the comic book characters. We've seen that cover We don't know what to make of that so far. I think Marvel's kind of missing the message of DC Rebirth. To me, that is more of a DC, you know, rewriting the ship more than anything else. Whereas Marvel, you know, we nitpick here and there why DC's kicking their butt, but really it just, they've never really were in that position where their fan base hated their books. And I think that's the reason why DC is so popular now. I think logistically there's so many things that help it benefit. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that next week when we talk comic book sales, how DC is able to outproduce Marvel right now just because of certain statistical and certain strategic things.
Yeah, well, I mean, too, with DC was the New 52 was like they got rid of core DC concepts, like the whole characters having a legacy. And they also just made everything so oppressively dark that it wasn't enjoyable anymore, and they would like change characters for no reason. Marvel hasn't done that. Marvel doesn't feel incredibly different right now. Like, they have new characters. They've changed, you know, Spider-Man a moderate amount, but they haven't made these big sweeping changes that DC made. DC going back made sense. They did something new and it wasn't as successful. Marvel, I don't think it's that they've tried new things. Like, I don't think the fact that Sam Wilson is Captain America hurt Captain America as a character. And, well, I mean, they have a Steve Rogers book now. But, you know, I don't think making a couple extra Iron Man and pushing Tony Stark to the side temporarily for storyline reasons has done anything to actually hurt the Iron Man character. I think it's just Marvel doesn't have the momentum. Like, period. They just don't have it.
Yeah, and they're misinterpreting as, oh, let's bring all the old stuff back. That's why people aren't digging our books right now. And that's really not it. It's more so DC sort of riding the ship, and it's like, okay, fans are wanting to reward that, and they only have so much money. So it's one of these things where Marvel's going to suffer, but it's nothing they're doing necessarily. It's because of that.
Yeah, and I mean, the other reason Marvel's doing this in storyline is I think they are finally starting to realize that this we have to constantly relaunch a book every 12 issues. It's not working anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody said it would stop working, and it has in fact stopped working. It's people know that when you relaunch a book after it's only been around for 10 or 12 issues and it has the exact same creative team on it, it's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. It's a new number one, which means out of 12 issues, they might get a bump in sales on one issue. And that hasn't even worked for every title. If you'll remember back to what was the last initiative called? Marvel Now?
Marvel Now 2.0. It's not called Now 2.0, but it's just Marvel Now again.
Some of those books didn't even sell at number one. Like, the number one issue didn't sell well. And the other problem is, you know, DC, when they relaunch new titles, they push the creative teams. They were like, oh, look, we got this person doing this, we got this person doing that, and then they gave books time to breathe. Marvel, they didn't get anyone new and exciting for anything. They just shuffled the deck a little bit. They lost writers, you know, more than they gained. So it wasn't even like – I mean, I think that might be one of the problems with these small movements as opposed to a big one. On a big one, you can plan ahead. You can work out deals with writers. You can work out deals with artists. You can plan some big storylines that you can do that carry through your whole series. That's what's been carrying DC. They locked good creators onto books, but they all have this overarching story that kind of gets dropped in. It's like a drip feeding of the story that keeps you hooked. Marvel doesn't have anything like that. They have multiple stories that run through in their own books. And in some ways you could say that's a stronger way to do it because you don't have to read every book to know what's going on. But the way DC's doing it, you do not have to read every book to know what's going on. You're just sort of rewarded if you read more of the books because you get more of these little hints. Mm-hmm. It's a smart way of doing things. I don't think it needs to be done. Comic books are not pro wrestling. You don't always need to have a long-running storyline. but Marvel's not even trying.
No. And some of the stuff they're doing isn't really helping. Like, going to our next news story, the idea of them trying to recapture nostalgia and people think, them interpreting that's what people want. In, they're going back to the renumbering of Venom. So this summer it'll be, they'll hit Venom 150. And with that comes an oversized issue, but there's also a creative, not a creative change, but something in the book. They're going to change the current Venom, which is Lee Price. And I think you and Dave, I talked to you guys off air about the story, and you're like, you guys didn't even know Flash Thompson wasn't Venom anymore.
Yeah, because the last I read him was that Guardian storyline where they went and they cured the symbiote and made it so it wasn't crazy. And you told me, well, they're replacing the new guy. And I go, Flash? And he goes, no, the new guy. And I'm like, who? And you go, it's Lee Price. I had no fucking idea who that was.
Well, remember I told you they were relaunching the Venom book? We went over that, and you're like, I don't care about Venom in 2017. And it didn't help that the direction they went in with was a new Venom. They didn't explain why Flash wasn't Venom anymore, even as I'm reading the story.
And Flash wasn't over as Venom. His book did not sell well.
There were a core fan of people that liked that, specifically disabled veterans who really liked the Flash character. But really, I know what you're speaking. I know what you're coming from. The Flash Venom series, even when it was just Agent Venom, didn't sell particularly well. It was just
it never has. And I mean that I almost understand. It's like, well, when was Venom super over? It was when he was. Sorry, it was when he was. He was anti-hero Venom, although you can make the argument it was when he was a villain, but he was so popular as a villain, they turned him into an anti-hero, and he had the Defender of the Homeless or whatever the fuck it was, but he'd still fight Spider-Man. You know, he wouldn't work with Spider-Man. He still hated him. But that was when the character was most successful. So why not go back to that? And I actually don't have a problem with that. That's
fine. And speaking of going back to that, the other thing is, with this 150 issue and them changing the current Venom Lee Price, going forward now is going to return back to form Eddie Brock.
Yeah. So the classic Venom will be Venom again. Mm-hmm. And we will have a new Venom series that, given that it's Eddie Brock, if they push it hard enough, maybe it'll work this time.
That was the one character. I'm surprised. Over the years, you've seen them do it with characters. They'll change them. And maybe after a year and change, they'll get cold feet, they'll want to change the character back. Venom was the one character that they kept changing, and there wasn't much of a reaction, so they just kept changing, and it's been years since Eddie Brock's been Venom.
Yes, I don't even know what he's doing in the comics, so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there was that
one Carnage story we read where they had Eddie Brock as, what was it, Toxic?
Oh, yeah, he apparently has superpowers. And he was a good guy.
Yeah, we never finished that storyline, so I may actually read this. I don't know if you're going to be interested enough to where when it finally comes out this summer that you're going to want to review on the show, but
I might try a first issue. I just think Venom, like, as an anti-hero, he could work as a villain. I really don't think he could work, because the problem is you have Carnage, who is like a more evil version of even an evil Venom. Mm-hmm. So it's odd to use Venom and try to build him a threat when you have Carnage, who is a cooler character design, in my opinion, and a little more threatening. Like, he's a serial killer who has the suit, whereas Eddie Brock is like a douche ex-jock. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not really threatening. It's, you know, Hannibal Lecter as Venom versus fucking Johnny from Karate Kid.
Well, it was also, he was a former Marine, so he had that going for him, too. And
well, that was later, though.
Yeah, and they also had the sympathetic thing where he was the guy who lost his legs in war.
Well, with Flash.
Yeah.
But I mean, they didn't really. That's kind of lessened by the fact that he has this fucking symbiote suit and it lets him walk around. Mm. So, I don't know. They're trying something.
Here's a funny story that I got from Talking the Slot. Apparently, there was a lot of people in Marvel Creative that thought, because he had the symbiote that he should walk around with the legs, or somehow he should be cured and have legs again. But the thing was, they got letters from veterans who had lost limbs, and that he was sort of their hero. So the idea that you're going to fix, quote unquote, fix Eddie Brock and give him legs again. It's like,
I don't know how many letters they got.
Yeah, but
honestly, really, I mean, yeah, I get
really,
it.
Alex,
but
it's like, I've been with you in burying certain groups, but come on, let's not do anything.
No, I'm not burying disabled veterans. Okay. It's not that. It's just how many of them actually wrote like, oh, Flash Thompson is my hero. Like, he's a minor character. Let's be serious.
Speaking of that, I was reading the Marvel Untold story book because you recommended it. And part of reading the history of Marvel is people from other creative Marvel titles sending letters in as fans and trying to convince Marvel to do certain things.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Because they didn't have the internet then.
No.
So they just write letters in and pretend to be fans. It's pretty good.
All right, talking Marvel nostalgia, moving on to DC nostalgia. A classic Kirby character will be brought back in the Young Animal imprint. The title is Bug, The Adventures of Forager.
Yeah, I'm completely unaware of this character, but I said to you, Jack Kirby created 9 million characters.
It's specifically,
most of them New Gods.
It's specifically a character from New Gods issue 9.
Yeah, I mean, he created so many fucking characters in New Gods, and none of them really, you know, whatever. The New Gods are still around, but they've never been a huge deal. But the most interesting thing about this is, say who the creative team is.
Okay, I'm not going to mention their last names, but the writer is Lee, the artist is Mike and Laura.
Yeah, their last name is Allred. We had to look, I go, wait a minute, who the fuck is Lee?
I thought it was his son. Like,
yeah, I thought it would be his son. It's apparently his brother, Mike Allred's brother. I don't know why you don't just have Mike Allred write it. He's written before. His wife is, I believe she's done pencils, but she's primarily a colorist. Mm-hmm. And then Mike obviously is an artist, but he can write, so I don't know why they didn't pick him. But they dug up his brother and said, hey, you want to write this? And he's like, yeah, sure, my brother and my sister-in-law are doing it.
It's weird because the thing caught my eye because I'm like, ooh, I never heard of this character before. But I saw that it was attached to the Young Animal imprint and that Allred – because I saw the Allred art. I was like, okay, whatever. He's just going to draw the cover and not do the book. He's doing all the interiors. It's a family affair. It's the brothers writing and the Mike and his wife are both drawing it.
It's – this.
What's that? Repeat that. You cut out a little bit.
I said it's cute that they're doing this. So, I mean, you know, I will obviously give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this. So there goes that. All right. As long as we're talking DC, now we've I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but apparently DC is going to be doing more Looney Tunes DC crossovers. Obviously, we've seen in the past before they had the Booster Gold Flintstones title. The one I'm eagerly anticipating is the Banana Splits and Suicide Squad, but announced they're doing even more. And some of them, even Alex actually kind of liked. One of them was Jonah Hex and Yosemite Sam.
Jonah Hex and Yosemite Sam, Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter.
Lobo versus the Roadrunner.
Where we just assumed Lobo will be the coyote trying to eat the Roadrunner.
Or catch him because he's a bounty. You know, we've learned so far from the classic Lobo, he's a man who always gets his bounty. But the Roadrunner may be too much for him.
Yeah. Like, I'm okay with this. I think it's...
Oh, and in the final one, Batman versus Elmer Fudd.
That one's a little weird.
I love the cover. It shows, like, you know, your classic silhouette of Batman, and in the silhouette is sort of like you could see it's being lit by a red light. They show a very pseudo serious Elmer Fudd. He's being drawn as a hunter, but it's sort of done in that pseudo realistic style. And he's got the shotgun with him. Your idea was in fact much better instead of doing Batman Elmer Fudd.
No, it was still Batman Elmer Fudd. It was just, my idea was Elmer Fudd versus Captain Carrot. But I guess that takes away the humor. Like, they're doing serious comic characters, except for Lobo, with the Looney Tunes characters.
Yes.
Like, and it's like, haha, that's funny.
And you also had an interesting idea with the interaction they can have with Batman and Elmer Fudd.
Oh, yeah, Batman puts his finger in the end of Fudd's gun, and it blows up in his face. Because Batman doesn't like guns.
Oh, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I would have liked that. No, I'll probably read these just because they'll be stupid fun. And they're going one issue. Like, it's not going to be a series.
Yeah, and most of these I'll probably read because it's like, why not? It's like, they're not super serious, and if they're only running one issue, you might as well just check it out.
I'll be interested to see the creative teams on this.
All right.
Because there are some guys who, you know, like, I can't recall his name, but I know the guy who's doing the Popeye book.
Mm.
People absolutely loved that. Like, they loved it. They thought he nailed that shit. And, you know, if you can get more guys like that who have, like, a feeling for these old characters and can do them in a way that's still enjoyable, like, that's what you want to target.
All right, now final news story, the Vertigo founder getting her own Dark Horse imprint.
Karen Berger. Now, the important thing to note about this is, when she did Vertigo, she went out on a little hiring spree. So she is responsible for Neil Gaiman, Grant Morrison, Warren Ellis, getting work in America. These guys were all comic creators. They all worked in the UK. And she kind of went on a junket to the UK. And she is responsible for hiring these guys. So she is, while she didn't create it, she was the editor for Sandman, for Morrison's early DC work, like Doom Patrol and stuff. She was the editor for Transmetropolitan. So she, at one point, had an eye for talent. Now, you can make the argument it was just that talent was already there. She happened to be around at the time it was there. Anyone could have seen they were good, and they grabbed them. But still, she found them. And her getting her own imprint at Dark Horse, you know, given her history, might suggest she's going to pick good products, because that's what she did in the past. She was very good at finding talent. She was very good at picking what books would succeed and what books would fail.
And she's using the old gimmick of creator-owned stuff, so that may be enough of an attraction to where a lot of people. I mean, Image does that nowadays.
It's a creator-owned imprint within Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Now, my question for that would be, if it's creator-owned, does she hook in some big-name friends to maybe come to Dark Horse instead of Image?
Yeah, because if they're going to be a formidable force, they have to be competitive with Image.
That's a lot more interesting. I didn't know that part, them doing a creator-owned imprint, because she obviously has connections. And, you know, creator-owned is, it's appealing to comic writers and artists, particularly if it's, you know, if they're, like, experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yes, so the idea of, you know, not only someone who was instrumental to this, I would guess you would say it's sort of like someone who's instrumental in not necessarily Image, but the idea of an Image company. Now she's doing her own creator-owned Image, Dark Horse thing. I have to imagine that's gonna lure some obviously established names, but I'm also sure that's gonna also attract some names who have tried to get into Image, but just Image is, it's very much, we often joke and say that the big two, but really it's kind of the big three. Maybe someone who can't quite get in an Image. Maybe.
Yeah, but I honestly think this is more about like obviously her track record's good, but you know, it's like, hey, why don't you use your big name connections to get us some writers? Cause a lot of these guys, like, they're not really under exclusives. I mean, what you're talking about is Warren Ellis under an exclusive now that he's got his own imprint. And I have to imagine he is, but maybe not. But any of these other big names that she's worked with are under exclusive deals. I don't know.
So yeah, that's going to do it for this week's news. Tons of big news this week. There was some stuff that we had from comic book sales, but we're going to predominantly cover that. We had some preliminary numbers, but we're going to put that off till next week. So something to look forward to as far as comic book news is concerned for next week's show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's news. Let's move on to our next segment. This week's books. Sewer surfing.
Okay, I don't know it, but I have to guess that's from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game.
You would be incorrect. It was in fact an arcade game at one point, but is Ninja Turtles 4 Turtles in Time.
Oh, but it is from a Ninja Turtles game, so yes. I at least got that right.
So you were half right, you weren't correct on the exact title. Although it was an arcade at one point, right?
I don't know if Turtles in Time was it, but yes, it was. I remember playing it in the arcade.
So that's this week's comic book theme. All right, let's go into this week's books, which include Generation Zero, Issue 7, Ultimates 2, Issue 4, U.S. Avengers 3, Spider-Man 13, Punisher 9, Old Man Logan 18, Mighty Thor 16, Clone Conspiracy 5, Captain America, Sam Wilson 11, Walking Dead 164, Kill or Be Killed, Issue 6, God Country 2, Wildstorm 1, Trinity 6, Super Sons, Issue 1, Lucifer 15, Justice League 15, Batman 17, Aquaman 17, Uber Invasion 3, and to open up this week's books from Archie Comics, we have Archie Issue 17, writer Mark Waid, art by Joe Yzma.
Okay, so Cheryl Blossom has arrived in Riverdale and explained to her brother that she is going after Archie to hurt Veronica. And she made a list of things he likes. And then did things to make him like her. She presented herself to her and would like give Betsy and Jug Handle gifts,
mm-hmm.
which is what she had.
All the calling
Betty
from a secret
and
admirer, yes.
And Jug Handle. That was my favorite. but yeah, so she's giving them gifts and then she like had her brother pretend he was in a car accident or something and his car was going to explode and somebody filmed her saving him and then she made a big deal about not wanting it to be on camera. Well, she hadn't met Archie yet though. And when she finally met him, she
she couldn't do it. She couldn't do this.
She couldn't do it. She couldn't do it. She's like, no, you're clumsy and a big goof and like it's even to get back at her, it's not worth it to be around this fucking goober. And just left. But at the same time, Veronica, her dad had said if she finished school early, I guess.
If she finished all her homework. Yeah, all of her workload, all the semester's work. If she did it like, you know, if she finished it early, she could leave early.
Yeah, now, another thing happened, and this I actually brought up, so I'm really glad Wade used this. When she arrives in, cause she did it, like her old, the old teacher who was running for mayor and Veronica's dad had him like run out of town, he ended up being a teacher at her school. but she even pleased him to satisfaction.
Actually, it wasn't necessarily that. There was a gimmick where he was like, oh, this is my chance for revenge. you know, I'm going to give you this assignment and if you finish it on time, but it's, you know, I'm going to do it at my leisure. And if it's not good enough, you're going to have to go back and redo it until I like it.
But she did it good enough.
No. She did a gimmick with that. She was like, okay, he's obviously not on my side here, but I'll do a gimmick to where I'll sabotage I'll go into his house and I'll change all the clothes into his house, the clothes I designed. And I'll make sure his alarm goes off so he wakes up really late and he can't even afford to look at what he's wearing. So
she made it so that he would walk out in what she got him and everyone would see him.
Yeah, because he didn't want to pass her because he wanted his chance for revenge.
Yeah, but everyone complimented him in front of her.
Yeah.
So he couldn't say, like, it wasn't a good look outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was kind of cute. So she goes back and then she's talking to Cheryl and she brings up like, hey, I'm just wondering, my dad did buy out your dad's company, but of course it was your dad's company. So when he bought it out, your dad would have gotten a giant amount of money from the purchase. So why is your dad telling you that you're poor now? And that was the cliffhanger. Like, why is her dad lying to her? Of course, everyone who read this book questioned. So her dad bought her company and that somehow made the family broke. How does that make any sense?
Yeah, because he was supposed to be bought off and it's like, okay, where did all that money go?
Yeah. Well, he kept the money and he's just telling his son and daughter that they're poor.
Because my justification for that last month when Archie came out was, okay, the company was bleeding money, and then with Veronica's dad owning it, he sort of righted the ship, but that included making sure the executives weren't paid so handsomely. He's like, okay, this company's got some problems, I'm gonna fix it, I'm gonna buy it, but what that includes, the executives are making way too much money, they're bleeding the company dry, so
he bought out the company. He wouldn't have had a job, but the dad owned the company.
Yeah, but
right. And even if you buy a company out with debt, you still have to purchase the company because.
No, but I'm saying that was part of him buying the company. It was like this company was hurting because the executives were getting so much money. So now that he bought the company, he decided, okay, I'm going to restructure the company, and the Cheryl's dad will still be an executive, but he'll be making a lot less money, and that, which is why he has to move to Riverdale. You forget this?
Whatever, that didn't happen because he got the money for the sale.
Yes.
He lied to his daughter. That I don't understand. That we'll have to figure out. Maybe they're trying to like soften her character, like make you feel bad for her. But I think it's a little too soon to do that, I think.
Well, I thought it was too soon to do the Archie stuff because it's like you were kind of hoping they would have gone somewhere with her trying to seduce Archie and then all of a sudden the first issue in – where she finally meets him, she doesn't think anything of him.
He just wouldn't do it, which, you know, says something about her character, it wasn't a useless thing.
Yeah, even though she's, you know, she's angry at Veronica, she hates her and she wants to get revenge, even she can't do it with a straight face. She's like, I can't do this.
Because Archie's too much of a nerd. Apparently very different from the successful Riverdale show, successful, by the way. I've read about it and I'm like, this sounds like such crap. And then, but apparently it's people like it.
There's no
I imagine
accounting for taste, apparently.
Teenage girls.
Well, you have to think about it. If you were going to have a show like that on that network, you would kind of hope it'd be something like what they have in the current incarnation of it. Cause there's no way you could have done, even now I'm questioning that. It's like, could they have done the current Wade series on a network like the CW?
Not on the CW. This is not a CW show, this comic.
It's good. I would argue it's better, but certainly not a CW show.
Well, yeah, but it's not a CW show. Like, it doesn't have enough, you know, drama and people getting old and whatever the fuck. Isn't this a show that does all the DC shows?
It's the network that does all the DC shows.
Yeah, well, Flash apparently isn't a sleazy show.
No. Actually, not
Green Arrow is a little sleazy.
It's a little, but not really. Like, it's not like the Riverdale series where it's really sleazy.
DC put requests on them. Well, I haven't seen it. So aside from like Archie banging his teacher,
And from what I've seen from Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow, that there's nothing sleazy there. So I don't know why they felt the need to make Riverdale a sleazy show. Maybe because it involves teenagers in high school. I don't know. Hard to say. All right, let's move on to our next publisher.
Aside from that.
What's that?
What was that? I'm sorry. I was talking to Lauren.
It's okay. What were you and Lauren talking about?
Archie.
Oh, okay. Did you lament?
She didn't make fun of me, no.
Did you say Betty belongs with Veronica?
Betty belongs with Veronica?
I meant Archie belongs with Veronica.
That would be more like the Riverdale show.
Yes, in fact, yeah, it would be. All right, let's move on to our next publisher, Avatar Press, with Uber Invasion, Issue 3, writer Karen Gillian, art by Daniel Getty.
We got our first real look at the German battleships in this. We did find out that they can be hurt. They're not invincible. Okay, so in the last issue, we saw the United States with their Panzermensch. Apparently, they haven't changed their names from the German names. I mean, I assume they're just called tank men, but they were using the... Then again, a part of this story was from the German point of view. Largely all of it was the German point of view. So, so they had their big group of tank men set up, and they said that we know from what happened in Europe that a bunch of these guys can hurt one of the battleships, one of the big, super, super, super powerful Nazi forces. So they sent them all in, and they were able to take out the lower level guys who like shot the energy stuff. They were able to kill them pretty effectively. But the big guy they were doing pretty good against until another one of the big guys who they didn't know about because they thought he was somewhere else showed up and saved him. Now, this guy was the reason they knew they could hurt them because he had his arm ripped off in the war by a bunch of the tank guys. But still, they pointed out, you know, well, we stopped the Americans here, so we're doing pretty good now because we just, you know, destroyed 300 of their superpowered people, which looks bad. And they showed up and they were like outside New York. So apparently they're going to destroy New York. But at that moment, there was an American soldier on a dock in Boston, and two of the English, the two surviving English super soldiers were there. So that could be a help. They have more experience, but I got the sense that the Americans already, like they knew what the score was. It's not like they were blacked out of all the information of what was going on in this. In this timeline, in this book, America did fight in Europe. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like they didn't. Oh, I'm not sure about that. And the only other thing was, that was the cliffhanger. But the only other thing was there was a brief talk with Hitler. Who?
This is great.
They basically, well, first Hitler was complaining that he has to live in this bunker and the food is terrible. And that's the worst thing about the war. But then, you know, the guy talking to him, it was Albert Speer, who was a real Nazi. But historically, there is argument about how much of a Nazi he was.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering this is a story about superhuman Nazis, I think they can take liberties with
the reason they did that is because he was proposing, like, maybe we talk to the Americans and maybe work out a peace agreement now. Mm-hmm. And Hitler was like, yeah, we'll pretty much destroy everything there, and then we'll talk about peace with what's left.
Nice.
Which was like, God, Hitler, you're such a dick.
I mean, okay, that's me saying nice to the way. I don't come off good in any of this now. I'm just going to stop.
Hitler, a very effective villain.
Yes, very much so.
But, you know, no, honey, I do not mean Trump. She asked if I was talking about Trump.
Ooh, wow. So your wife, too, was an edgelord?
No one in the Minor family is a big Trumper. So,
well, don't give away your last name, homie.
What? No, I don't care.
Oh, tell Laura she's also an edgelord now.
Tony says you're an edgelord. Yeah, I won't repeat that. My wife is not currently on the show.
I caught some of that. Something about me being smart. Right?
No, she said Trump isn't smart.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. There's your scathing review of Trump. All right. Let's move on to DC with Aquaman issue 17, writer Dan Abnett, art by Scott Eaton. Warhead part 2.
Warhead is an interesting villain because he has no character.
He's a very one-dimensional character.
He can't talk.
No.
But Aquaman seems to think he is, he's like, I don't know, friendly with him?
I didn't get that impression.
Well, Aquaman seemed to think that he was, he was like communicating. He was trying to communicate with him. Cause the big, okay. So this thing can like take people over. He could also take over weapon systems and whatever else, but he would take things over and then make them fight for him basically. And God, this is hard to explain.
Basically he can mind control people, and I presume with that they at the end of this book they show him being confronted with a tank. Now I don't know if that is included with his power, he can take over weapons, or it's just somebody driving the tank. I wasn't 100% sure on that. But that's basically the gimmick going forward, following all the stuff that happened from the last arc with Nemo. Everyone loves Aquaman. They're talking about the UN putting, you know, Atlantis as part of it. But as he's doing his speech, he sees an image of like this wounded villain. And from there, he's able to deduce that Warhead's trying to manipulate him, but it's not working on him. And because of that, Warhead sends a couple people after him to shoot Aquaman. But the thing is, he can control people, but unlike where he's just, they're openly hypnotized, they can't stop.
They know they're being controlled.
Exactly, and they can talk and communicate with Aquaman saying, look, I don't want to do this, someone's controlling me. And specifically in the instance of where they opened up with the guy with the shotgun said, I don't want to do this, somebody's controlling me. Aquaman's trying to say, who. Eventually he's able to track down Warhead, and that's pretty much how the issue ends, with a bunch of people trying to attack Aquaman.
When you said who, I thought about the new
guy. Who.
Yeah.
No, I'll say this much of this book. I like it. I like it a lot more than I like the New Day in 2017.
They're the hosts of WrestleMania, you know.
Does that mean they're... Oh, that means they're not wrestling, right?
That means they don't have a match, I guess. they couldn't figure out what
Creative
to do
has
with
nothing
them.
For them.
Yes. Creative has absolutely nothing for them. Which is a shame, but I don't really care about them anymore.
Considering so that the big four, I mean, this is going to be our little wrestling corner for a second. Considering Mania is supposed to be when you could do the cross brand matches, can't you do New Day versus American Alpha?
They haven't done a lot of cross brand matches. No, because American Alpha has the belts.
Yeah, they can do it for the belts.
They could. But they're not going to.
Okay. Batman issue 17, writer Tom King, art by David Finch. I Am Bane part 2.
Okay, so we had a couple things in this issue. First, we had to confirm that the Robins who were beaten bloody were actually Nightwing, Jason Todd, and Damian.
Was it Damian? I thought it was Grayson.
He was Nightwing.
Yeah.
There were three of them. It was Jason Todd, mm-hmm. Nightwing,
oh,
which is
okay.
Grayson,
so
and Damian.
Was it Damian? Okay. So from there, they show them that they were in cryo at the Fortress of Solitude, and Batman pretty much told Superman, look, if they wake up, they're going to go back to Gotham, and they're going to try to fight Bane again, and they're going to lose and presumably get killed. He's like, just hold them for a day. I'll go one-on-one with Bane. I'll take care of the situation. Superman tells him, okay, whatever. They're good. I'll keep an eye on them. So this cuts to Batman going back to Gotham to confront Bane. But while they're doing this, they cut to what looks like a police officer escorting a taped up Arkham criminal being escorted into Arkham. She's put in a container with the Psycho Pirate. And the idea going forward is Alfred's there with Gotham Girl.
With a gun on Psycho Pirate's head.
Yeah, because the thing is, with Psycho Pirate, he can easily manipulate people to do what they want. But the thing is, she's been scarred, and the only way Batman feels like that she can be rehabilitated is with the Psycho Pirate.
It's going to take 4 days.
Yeah, they're doing therapy sessions, but the thing is, it's obviously like a Hannibal Lecter thing where, you know, he's using the stick and carrot to sort of manipulate Psycho Pirate and doing the right thing. All while he's doing this, while he's really rehabilitating Gotham Girl, he's dropping all these lines of dialogue to let you know that Psycho Pirate remembers everything from all of the
crises. There was one line.
Okay.
Where he actually referred to the crisis and the Flashpoint. Mm-hmm. So for the people like, you know, me, who had the hints that maybe this is, maybe Psycho Pirate still remembers all the continuity rearranging, this confirmed that, yeah, he does.
It's funny, because they're doing all the stuff with Bane right now, but all the stuff with the Psycho Pirate is the stuff I care about. Because he's being treated as a giant threat, and even where he's in Arkham Asylum, they put him in the container that they had Mr. Miracle make. So, that was built specifically for the Joker. So they're putting over Psycho Pirate as his giant threat. They're making him basically Hannibal Lecter, where, you know, they're using the stick and carrot to sort of manipulate him into fixing Gotham Girl. And to me, that's way more interesting than all the stuff they're doing with Bane. Because the idea is Bane's upset because he tried to go straight, get off of Venom.
Clearly not off of Venom now.
Yeah, he's back on it. He's looking for revenge. He's obviously, he messed up the Robin family. In this, we had a scene where Duke was talking to Commissioner Gordon. And Gordon said, aren't you part of the Bat family that Batman said shouldn't be confronting Bane? He's like, well, Batman doesn't know doesn't hurt him. And it's then that they're confronted by Bane. And Bane makes quick work of Duke. And at the end, we had the confrontation between Batman and Bane.
But they didn't have much of a confrontation.
Yeah, but that's how this issue ends. And there was also the subplot, maybe you can help me out with, the Catwoman stuff. I think that's, as much as I like all these storylines, my one weakness of this title going forward is it seems he's telling all these interesting stories, but at the same time, it's like, I'd rather do it one at a time, whereas we're getting a little bit of each. And I'd rather just we get one at a time, because he's juggling all these balls, but at the same time, it's like, we're not getting progression. We're not getting as much progression as you would hope. And that's fine. I understand where he's coming from, that this is going to be a bi-weekly book. But at the same time, it's like, dude, go with the story and just go with it. And really, when it comes to me, the Psycho Pirate stuff is the most interesting.
Well, he did set up what's apparently going to be a fight between the two in the very last page. That was done properly. They removed the Robins from harm under the assumption that Bane would hurt them worse since he already almost killed them. This did move the story. It set things up. It's just, I don't know if the threat is supposed to be Bane is at Arkham and Gotham Girl is also at Arkham, locked in a special, you can't get into it cage thing. Like, I'm not sure why they did the story in the same place, aside from the fact that Psycho Pirate was in Arkham.
And as long as we're talking about sort of meta stuff from Psycho Pirate, I like the way this book opens up where I forget who it was, but somebody was watching TV and they mentioned Year Zero and Night of the Monster Men as being failures.
Yeah, I thought that was cute. I read that and I'm like, really, King? You're burying your own?
Well, to be fair, that wasn't necessarily his deal.
Well, yeah. But
he was co-writing it, but, you know, it was only because it was being tied with all the Batman stuff. And honestly, I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't read any of your...
By the end.
Yeah, but I thought it got really kind of weak toward the end. I thought it was really good in the middle.
Oh, I thought the last issue was the strongest, where he actually went and confronted Strange. And Strange was balls crazy. I thought that was the best part of the book. But when they were fucking fighting monsters, like when the Bat family is fighting 50-foot tall monsters, that wasn't really my cup of tea.
I liked it because it was different. Just Batman versus Strange. It's like, okay, seen that before. Batman the Bat, extended Bat family finding a bunch of monsters that seem to get stronger as you kill them.
Yeah, I like Batman when he's not doing, you know, normal. I like the street level stuff. That's why I like so many of Batman's villains, because they don't have superpowers. Like Joker, Two-Face, Penguin, Riddler, they don't have superpowers.
Except my favorite storyline going forward is the current stuff with Psycho Pirate, who in fact has
but he's not the villain.
Or is he?
No. Psycho Pirate's a walking plot device. He always has been.
Yeah, but he's up to something if Alfred has to have him do the rehabilitation stuff with the gun. You know he's up to something.
He's technically a villain. He's just not a top villain.
Yeah, but
he's only being used in the story because King wants to refer to the continuity rearranging.
Yeah,
that's why he's in this story.
Look, I wouldn't be surprised if in the rehabilitation of Gotham Girl, he turns Gotham Girl against Alfred, and that becomes a storyline in the future.
That they've already done that.
Well, they'll probably do it again, and it's probably I don't see
they might have Alfred kill him.
I don't think they're going to kill Alfred. If anything, I can see them killing Gotham Girl.
Oh, I said they might have Alfred kill Psycho Pirate.
To me, he's so important to the Rebirth stuff, I wouldn't kill him.
That might be why they kill him. He's Maybe. A crutch.
If anything, I see them killing Gotham Girl.
Well, she doesn't need to be around.
Yeah, that's what
and
I'm saying.
She's going to die anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You could just kill her off.
I don't want Psycho Pirate to be a lead heel. I just don't like that.
I like it. It's different.
He can't. He has to look at you and talk to you to have you do things. Yeah, like,
but he can use other people like Bane and Gotham Girl.
But he doesn't have to use Bane for Bane to be a threat. Bane's already a threat without him.
Yeah, but I like the idea of Psycho Pirate being the big bad. He has other people doing his work for him.
I don't.
To each their own.
And he doesn't really mind control.
But he manipulates people.
Yeah, he can, but I mean, that's not his power. Like, what does he say to them? Loyal? And then they're loyal to him? Like, what does he do?
You can have them fear Batman and want to kill Batman.
And that's actually loyalty is not an emotion, so he can't even do that.
Yeah, but they can have him fear the Psycho Pirate and also fear Batman and want to kill Batman.
That's Scarecrow.
Still, it's part of the Psycho Pirate's gimmick.
I just think he's there for the Rebirth stuff.
Yeah, but then why would you kill him off then?
So he's not a crutch for the Rebirth stuff. So you don't learn too much.
Oh well.
Jeez. I don't think it's ever been explained why Psycho Pirate remembers all this shit.
Okay, he was there for the crisis.
Uh-huh. Why does he remember Flashpoint?
Because he remembers everything.
Why, though? That's what I'm saying. I don't think they've ever explained that. He was in the... I think he was in the Morrison Animal Man run, I think. Mm. And that's where they found out he remembered everything, if I remember right. So, I mean, this has been a thing with the character. I just don't know why. It's okay, though. He's right. Normal.
It's normal for it to do things that don't quite make sense right now. Whoop! And to get busted for drugs again. Whoop!
To get busted. Because every time I fight, penis. Did he get busted again?
Yes. He got flagged again.
Oh, God. Did they say what it was? Was it penis pills?
No, not yet. That was his defense last time.
Why didn't they ever say what it was?
They did, but I didn't know what the drug was, or at least, you know, off the top of my head, I can't figure out what it was.
He shot steroids, but he shot them directly into his penis.
Yes.
And then he did it again. Anderson has to fuck before the fight. He's good for the knees. Mick was wrong. He's normal. what's next?
Justice League 15, writer Brian Hitch, art by Fernando Parson.
Okay, this story jumped around a lot, but it jumped around a lot because they're doing time travel. Mm-hmm. So once I was able to wrap my head around that, I was okay with it. So we saw a bunch of stuff, including, oh God, what's his name? The Kronos, the father of Zeus and all the gods who ate the gods.
Yes.
And then Zeus killed them. they traveled to that time. Okay, basically there are these people called the Timeless who are a cult of some type who think all the people with superpowers need to be removed from the earth. So somehow they have built a time bomb, which doesn't really look like a bomb. It just, you know what it looks like? No. The planet killer from Force Awakens. A
little bit. Yeah. I can see.
Like, yeah. That's what it looks like. That's what I was thinking when I watched it. I'm like, oh, this is like the Death Star that was on a planet. Yeah. They built one of those, but it exists through multiple points in time. And apparently to stop it, the Justice League are going to have to attack it at multiple points in time. But the things they are fighting are very powerful. Like the Green Lantern's rings had no effect on them. Which, again, just burying. This team has two Green Lanterns and they're both just so inferior to the real Green Lanterns. these guys are sub-Guy Gardner Green Lanterns.
Hey.
But he's the worst one.
I'm not going to sit here and let you besmirch Guy Gardner. Even compare them to these jobbers, no.
Well, he's...
unacceptable.
They're worse. I did say they're worse than him.
Yeah, but you imply he's they're worse than the weakest...
Because Kyle and Hal, and they're both good. And you got John, he's pretty good. And then you have Guy Gardner, and he's a level below.
Is it too late to change my boys?
You want to put Guy Gardner in?
No, because I already have the five.
Oh, okay. Well, you could always drop somebody out and add Guy Gardner.
I'm thinking about it. I'm steadily, but we've only had the boys for a week now, so I'll do that.
Yeah, so it's too soon.
I won't let you besmirch the name of Guy Gardner.
But so they have the Justice League in these different time periods. One of them actually was in the 31st century and talked to Brainiac. So maybe my hope of all hopes is this is how we get the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
I don't really think they're going to do that. Even though this is Justice League, this does not feel like one of the major books to me, and it never has, which is a... The thing with Hitch's Justice League run is he writes these big epic stories, but they're never referred to anywhere else, which makes them feel much less epic. Like, they never refer to Justice League in the other books, and it just seems a lot more is going on in the other books. So I don't think they would use this to introduce the Legion of Superheroes. And these are also, like... they're not necessarily the real timelines. They could be like alternate timelines. Mm-hmm. So we don't even know. But we did see Brainiac and we saw the 31st century. So that's pretty fucking sick. And is the reason I will continue to read this. But yeah, so they have to stop a time traveling threat that is going to erase all people with superpowers.
Which is odd, considering they're going after Batman, who currently has no superpowers.
Well, he's a superhero, though. They want to get rid of all superheroes and supervillains.
Also Cyborg?
He has super technology powers.
It's not much of a
power.
He's
got fucking boom tubes at him, dude. It's alien tech. He shouldn't have that.
But it's all existing DC technology.
But not on Earth.
Earth?
They want to make America great again, dude.
I should be in favor of it, is what you're saying?
Yeah, they're trying to make America great again by getting rid of these foreign superhero shit.
Yeah, like
Superman's an alien.
And Wonder Woman's from, you know, some island of women.
Yeah, she's from Themyscira. Like, where's her green card? I'm reading Wonder Woman year one. How'd she get to Earth? She just came here and, like, just said, oh, I'm a citizen now? That's not right. Trump would deport her.
Superman's an anchor baby.
Yeah, Jonathan is his anchor baby. You can't deport him now because he has a kid. That's not making America great.
Since we talked about Jonathan, let's move on to our next title. Super Sons Issue 1, reader Peter J. Tomasi, art by George Jimenez.
This is an enjoyable...
I love this book so much. It's
comic
so
about
fun.
Two young superheroes. It established that, you know, Jonathan is a very good boy, as he would be. He's the son of Superman.
My only nitpick, and it's really the most minute nitpick, why is Jonathan's last name Kent?
Who called him that? Did they call him that at school?
They called him that at school, and I believe also Damian called him that.
Damian would know who he is, because Damian knows who Superman is.
This is something
calling him that at school is a problem, because their last name is White.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Lois is back in what's it called? What's the city where Superman's from?
Metropolis.
But she's back in Metropolis as just Lois Lane.
Yeah, she's not married to Clark White or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Superman's secret identity is Clark White, and their son is Jonathan Kent. This doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. That is a problem.
I mean, it's not a huge problem, which is why I say it's a nitpick of that title, because this title is, in fact, very good, and I really like that they have a title like this, considering some of their stuff seems kind of serious, so it's kind of nice that they have a lighthearted book between... with Damian and Jonathan. But there is that continuity error of isn't Jonathan's last name supposed to be White because he's the son of Kent White?
Yes, you are correct. That is a problem, but, you know, not a big one. I didn't even notice it, so that's fine. But
I get the feeling it's going to be a storyline going forward. They're going to be like, so, why is Lois hanging out with this Clark White guy? Why do they have a son?
So what happened in this book, though, was Damian disguised himself as a school bus driver to take Jonathan to school and then trailed him all day, saved him from some bullies. What happened is there are these bullies who are picking on a kid, and they're trying to show the differences between Jonathan and Damian. And Jonathan goes up to him like they were like shooting like spitballs at the kid, because apparently kids still do that. And Jonathan went up and told him to stop. And then they just shot the spitballs at him, and he couldn't do anything. His parents taught him you can't use your powers. And then they got to the school, and they were going to have a snowball fight. And the bullies, they put rocks in the snowballs and made one of his friends bleed, and that pissed him off. But he wouldn't do it back. Like he said, he just threw the snowballs a little bit harder than he would have otherwise because he got mad. But he wouldn't use his powers. However, Damian... made a gigantic snowball and was standing on the roof and dropped it on all the kids. It was very cartoonish. It was a Wile E. Coyote move. But then appears to Jonathan at night after he goes to bed, and he's like, God, you have a kid's bedtime, 9 o'clock? You nerd. Come on, we're going to go do superhero stuff. So Jonathan does, in fact, sneak out with him, and they go off to do superhero stuff. They're climbing up the side of, Lex Luthor building, Lex Core Tower, whatever. And Damian had mentioned it's really lame that you can't fly. And he's like, well, I can't fly yet. I don't have that power yet. But they're climbing up the side of the building, and Lex Luthor in his Superman armor flies up, and he's like, hey kids, what are you doing?
Isn't it a school night?
Yeah. And then the issue ended. Now, this isn't that threatening because Luthor is currently not a bad guy. But we'll see what happens. Like, because you got Batman's kid and Superman's kid, and here's Lex Luthor.
Yeah. It's
a fun story.
Yeah, and I like it because they have an interesting dynamic. Obviously, they're characters onto them own selves, but their dynamic and their characters are similar to their dads, which I like as well.
Yeah, and the, I mean, the cute part about it is that, you know, Batman and Superman are dissimilar. Mm-hmm. These two are even more so. Like, Damian is a lot more hardcore than Batman.
Well,
and
yeah, but what you have to think about this, it's still Batman, though. If Batman had a son, you'd imagine, even if he wasn't trained by the League of Shadows, you have to imagine he would still act a lot like this.
He's a little more rebellious than Batman was. I mean, that's really the only difference, I guess. He's got a little more rebel in him. But yeah, other than that, they're not too dissimilar. But these two, Jonathan and Damian, are very much not alike. Like, they both want to be superheroes. Well, Damian already is. And they pointed out, like, a lot of the, like, Damian's driving a bus, mm-hmm. and he's like, you know, 12. And he's like, well, I learned how to drive when I was 5. You know, they're very, very different. Like, Damian or Jonathan goes to bed at 9 o'clock so he can get up for school. Damian fights all night. Like, Damian is homeschooled. But they did show that, like, Batman told him he couldn't go out because he had 5 homework assignments and he was late on them. Mm-hmm. So he had to do those. And Damian's like, oh, fuck, Dad. And he went out anyway, whereas Jonathan had to be talked into going out because Damian's much more of a rebel. I guess because he was raised by the League of Assassins. And he doesn't see much use in it. As he told Bruce, why do I have to do the homework? I already know everything. Which I thought was a good line from Damian. But yeah, two very different characters who work together. And I imagine they work together because they've shown, like, Damian doesn't really have any friends. Because he's a big weirdo who's homeschooled.
He has his friends, the Teen Titans, but there is that the idea of that they're both the sons of the superhero. I mean, all the other Teen Titans, you know, Wally, he's not necessarily the son. He's not the son of Barry Allen. And
yeah, they have a different gimmick, and it's also, you know, it's the part of it is it's Superman and Batman have always been tied together, so Superboy and Robin would then be tied together. You know, my dad works with your dad, so we do the same stuff, so I should work with you. That kind of thing.
But yeah, I like this book. Most of the DC books tend to be kind of serious, so it's kind of nice that we have this lighthearted series to kind of change it up.
Yes, that is good. And even the other book, Damian's in Teen Titans, it's a much... It's more serious than this. Like, you feel bad for Damian in that. Because, like, you know, the whole thing is he basically made the team because he had no friends. That's a much sadder story than this, where it's like him and Jonathan are friends.
And instead of doing serious stuff where they're fighting, you know, crime lords and whatnot, they're just going on hijinks.
Yeah, well, he apparently wanted to do something...
Yeah, but I get the feeling going forward, this book is never really going to get all too super serious.
I don't think it will, no, because there's no need for it. Like, you can do that in the Titans book if you have to do it, or you can do it in one of the Batman titles he's in. You don't need to do it in this book. It's supposed to be more fun.
All right. Since we're talking the Batman-Superman dynamic, let's move on to our next book. Trinity, issue 6, writer and artist Francis Manapul. The Better Together Part 6, where this was pretty much the conclusion of all the stuff with Poison Ivy and Mongol.
I didn't like this.
I liked it because it was different. It was in the direction I thought it was going, where Poison Ivy was evil and working for Mongol. Is where she was sort of just being manipulated because she wanted, I don't know, she wanted a son.
Yeah, apparently. Like, I didn't hate it. I don't know, something about this didn't do it for me.
But basically, the way this concluded was Mongol was able to take over Superman's body, and he was going to go out and wreck shop. But White, was it White? White Mercy, the quote unquote son of Mongol and Poison Ivy, sort of regretted what he had done to help Mongol out. And
yeah, he wasn't a bad guy.
No, and the thing is, the last issue they kind of painted up as a bad person because, you know, he was the son of Mongol, and Mongol taught him to be a horrible person. In fact, there was a panel where he was standing over the skulls of various Supermen. So he'd been raised to be an evil person, but he had since regretted it after he'd seen what he'd done. So what he done as a result, he took over Bruce Wayne's body and he was able to stop Mongol. They ripped the plan off of Superman, allowing Superman to come back and Mongol going back to his, being part of the Black Mercy.
Yeah, which the interesting part about it was they never had a fight with Mongol.
Here's the reason why he went. He didn't feel guilty. The thing is, he was raised to be bad, so naturally he was bad. He thought, you know, that's just the way you exist. But the thing is, while manipulating Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, he learned that you can, there's in fact good in the world. And
you could be a good person and going through their, their dreams or whatever it was. He saw what, you know, good was, and that made him, it was the only time he ever saw anything good, because Mongol obviously didn't show him that. Mm-hmm. So he decided to be good. And this also, like, Poison Ivy, I guess, is not a bad guy.
Yeah, because she's in the Harley Quinn book. So I presume they've done a baby face with her for a while, but I thought this was her going back to her old ways. But it turns out she was just being manipulated by Mongol to give her a son. And at the end of this book, even though White Death disappeared in the astral projection plane, at the end they showed this little plant kid show up, and I presume it was White Mercy.
Didn't look like him, but
it looked reminiscent. I mean, it was a little kid made of plants, so you put the two and two together.
Yeah. So Poison Ivy has a son now, and he's at the farm.
What's that?
He's chilling in the Kent farm. In the White farm.
Yeah. I mean, he's the son of Poison Ivy and Mongol.
Sort of. He's the son of Poison Ivy and a plant.
But he was raised by Mongol.
Yeah.
It's weird.
If that character comes back, that'll be a very strange character.
I wouldn't argue that character being used in the future, though, because it's certainly an interesting character.
Yeah, it'd be fine, I guess. It's just so weird.
And even though we explained it's not, I do like the idea of going forward, everyone jokes. It's like, aren't your parents Mongol and Poison Ivy? How did that happen?
I know, they never even hooked up. Poor Mongol.
Never even got to hit it, right?
Yeah, he didn't even get to hit it. And Poison Ivy was looking fly as fuck in this book.
Yeah, poor him.
I know.
It's bad enough he is being tortured by the Black
Mercy. All Mongol cares about is killing, though. He doesn't care about the relations.
That's true. He probably just kills Poison Ivy.
Yeah,
a chance.
He'd kill her.
And then he'd have his way with her body.
Oh. They've never indicated he's into that.
No, that's just Thanos.
Well, no, Thanos doesn't want dead girls. He wants death. Mm-hmm. It's different.
I don't know, dude. Remember
it was never sexual. He wanted to be worthy of her.
Remember that solo series by Aaron where he would have sex with the girl and then he'd cry when we'd kill them?
That was weird.
Lucifer issue 15, writer Richard Carney, art by Lee Garbett.
Still working on the story with Evil God. I just love the God. They finally done it. They officially made Lucifer the good guy and God the bad guy.
Yes.
By creating an evil God. Lucifer is still a dick, but, you know, God is more evil. So Lucifer had his agent girl running around going on missions for him. He needs an angel heart. And I don't know why Lucifer couldn't do this himself. I don't think he ever actually explained that. I think he's just lazy. Mm-hmm. But he gave her a little box and he said, okay, you're going to use this. You're going to go to this guy and in this box, she's like, what's in the box? And he goes, it'll be whatever the people most desire. So she goes to this guy who Lucifer said probably wouldn't have an angel heart. Like he collects body parts. He's like a creepy doctor. He probably won't have an angel heart, but he'll be able to tell you who does have it. And she's like, okay. So she goes to this guy and he's like, oh yeah, I can give you a name. He's like, but what do you got for me? And she has him open up the box and there's like a little vial in it. And he says what it is and he drinks it and he thinks it's going to give him immortality. But when he drinks it, he turns into like this, it's kind of like a,
it's like a what?
It's like a cute little pink creature.
It looks like a slime.
Yeah, but apparently it's a real thing. Yeah. She calls Lucifer and she's like, yeah, he thought it was this. And he's like, oh, you wanted immortality. Well, that's not very original. He's like, yeah, it turned him into this. And she's like, what? And he goes, oh, it's a type of jellyfish and it can turn back into polyp form whenever it wants. So it's technically immortal.
Wow.
So he drank this thing because he wanted to be immortal and it turned him into a jellyfish that is effectively immortal. Mm-hmm. And I looked this up. This is a real thing, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought it was just something DC lore. I didn't know if it was
a real thing. No, it's a real thing. It's a creature that is apparently immortal. However, they're tiny and they get eaten most of the time. Ah. So it doesn't really matter. But theoretically, they're immortal. So, yay. But she got a name, and she got to go. And then we did some cuts. We cut to God talking to his angels, who don't look particularly happy to be working for evil God.
No.
But they feel they don't really have a choice. And then he tells Lucifer's kid that he's going to, you know, because he's like, hey, Taquito or whatever the fuck. His name is something like that, Takahito.
Yeah, it's something.
But that sounds like Taquito to me. However, he's Japanese. He's not Mexican.
No.
But he's like, hey, you still want to kill Lucifer, right? And he's like, well, yeah, of course. And he's like, okay. And he picks him up, and he's going to turn him into the new Lightbringer. So he's giving him Lucifer powers. Which is also going to help him, you know, destroy humanity because evil God decided humanity's fail. You know, his whole gimmick is we got to destroy this creation and make a new one where people don't have free will because the problem was this whole free will thing. Hang on a sec. Okay. Lauren was just showing me that she straightened up the house.
Isn't that her job? Oh, tell her I said that.
Oh, I'm not going to tell her you said that. That's horrible, actually.
Shouldn't she be too busy in the kitchen?
I did just tell her you said that, and now I'm getting an angry look. I defended you.
She can go back and listen if she doesn't believe you.
I defended you.
Oh, God.
I'm leaving this in, by the way. I hope you know that.
Oh, that's terrible. Lauren does clean a lot.
All right.
Wait, what were we talking about? I completely lost track.
We were talking about Lucifer.
Oh, Lucifer. Yeah, so the only other funny part in the book was Gabriel was taking some... I can't even remember who the guy was, but he was really sad about his angel boyfriend being gone. So Gabriel's suggesting, like, oh, well, have you tried Tinder? I hear that's a good place to find
love.
He's
like, I'm looking for the love of my life, not to hook up.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not looking to hook up. And he's like, well, that's okay. I got a plan B. And the plan B is he took him to a gay bar. And he looks at him and he's like, you are the worst angel ever. And he just goes, I know. Which I thought was kind of funny. Like,
awesome.
You're so shit at being an angel. But, yeah, so that happened too. But... Yeah, so the story's moving forward, but it's what this isn't really a problem with the book because it's true to the character, but the runs the long game and he always knows more about what's going on than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
However, he's ostensibly our main character. So I always get the sense that the main character is holding back a shit ton of information, which in this book and in other books, it has led to Lucifer explaining his entire plan. And it always makes sense. And you're like, oh, that's really cool. But I don't know if I like being always lied to by the main character of a book.
Well, if they're really going to do that with any book, it'd be this one, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, he is the devil, so that's fine. But, you know, there's just, it's, you always get the sense that we don't totally, I mean, we're in a pretty good spot now as far as what's going on. You know, there's an evil god, blah, blah, blah. That's all fine. But it's just, Lucifer always seems like he knows everything that's going on and he's not telling us jack shit. Mm. And even though he's, you know, super powerful guy, he's always working through other people, which I guess, again, he's the devil. That is what he would do. But still, it's a little annoying. Like, Lucifer get his hands dirty, huh?
That'd be cool.
That's, you know, I imagine he's going to kill evil God.
And then make him good again?
In the end. And then make him good again. Which, you know, Lucifer wouldn't actually be happy with. But he still has his own creation. He can always go back there.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know what happens in the book then. I would like to see some time of Lucifer in his own creation and just see what it's like.
That would be, in fact, a good book that I'd be down
for. Yeah, like see what he actually created, like what is his ideal.
It'd be funny if it was just like a paradise.
Well, I mean, his whole thing is you can't have free will. You can't actually have free will if everything is predestined to happen. So, I don't know what his creation would be like. And we never got to see it.
No.
So, we don't know. Oh, well. It's there, though. This book, from what I understand, is well thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's not going anywhere. They got time to do.
Right, as long as we're talking about people's creations, let's talk, since we got the mainline DC stuff out of the way, let's talk Warren Ellis's creation, Wildstorm Issue 1 from his imprint Wildstorm, and art by John Davis Hunt.
You were right, I like this a lot more than you.
Yeah, here's the thing, I didn't hate this. This is not me saying hate, but with that said, I'm disappointed, and this is okay. Like,
this is very much in the tradition of Warren Ellis' first issues.
Mm.
I think he explained a little more in this. He explained the players. One of the problems with this is, and it's not his fault, he's dealing with characters, but they are in a different situation from what they've ever been in because he's been given an entire universe to play with. So we opened up with Zealot, who had just murdered a bunch of people. But she was apparently on a mission. She was set on some kind of mission. And the two big players in this version of Wildstorm are Io, who are an old, you know, the big secret muckety mucks in the Wildstorm universe. And I can't remember what it's called. This big corporation run by Jacob Marlowe, who was also a classic Wildstorm character. And Io is trying to drop them down a bit because they are introducing all this technology, which, while good, is moving the world forward a little faster than Io thinks is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent someone to kill him and failed to kill him. But another part of the story that, like, we saw some of the other agents, like we saw Voodoo there, which is a retcon because Voodoo was a character in the New 52. So they've shunted her back over to the Wildstorm universe. And then, the Engineer was there, but her character has changed a lot. Her gimmick is she is an engineer. She works for IO, and her little engineer bodysuit, it's apparently inside her, but it's not finished and it's not working right. And she goes to, like, I don't know if he was her boss or what. He was someone higher up in IO, and, like, he's having dinner somewhere, and she walks up and he kind of spoke badly of her. Like, he said something to the effect of, oh, she's probably on the way to the crack house.
Nice.
Like, giving the indication she's kind of crazy, and she does appear to be kind of crazy. Like, she came up to him and basically said, I need more money, I need more staff, I need more supplies, I'm working on something. It's going to change everything. It's hugely important, and I need your support. And he's like, maybe you should talk to your department head. And she's like, no, I had to come direct to you. And he's like, yeah, talk to me about it on Monday. Well, seconds after that, Marlo gets thrown out of his fucking building, and she engineers up and goes to save him, and then flies away. So later on, they're looking, and they find out it was her. That's when we find out they were the ones who tried to kill him because of what I said earlier. Marlo's problem was he had, like, built-in defenses both in the building and in his own body. And this guy was able to cancel them out. The only reason he didn't die was because she saved him, but the little explosion that happened between him and the guy trying to kill him, he didn't intend for that to happen. That was an accident. He didn't try to kill himself. He got, by the explosion that was created, he got blown back out the window.
Yeah, sure, that's what it was.
Yeah, they're upset that she saved him, but we don't know what they're going to do. So what we got in this first issue was we got a picture of the big game players, and then we got some of the pawns, but not all of them. Like, for example, like Grifter was featured heavily in all the ads for this, and he didn't appear in this.
No.
The fact that Voodoo was in this means that other characters who were in the New 52 may appear in this, because she was in the DC universe and now she is no longer there. She is in Wildstorm. So any of the other Wildstorm characters they want to move over, that tells me they can move them over. And there were some characters who were never used. Most of the Stormwatch characters, and they referred to Skywatch in this, which would most likely be the same thing. They just referred to it. They didn't show it. So some of those older characters that Ellis used could be here. We were talking about, are they going to put Apollo and Midnighter in? They could. The one thing I felt with this was, like, Engineer was the closest thing to superpowers we saw. And that's a mechanical thing. And it didn't work right. Although Zealot, obviously, we didn't get to see what she did, but she fairly brutally murdered quite a few people. So she might very well have superpowers, but it's the art in this is very good. So don't mistake what I'm saying here. It looked like a very street level book.
At least so far.
Yeah, I'm at this point, like Spartan, Apollo, even Midnighter, they don't really fit with what they're doing. But that doesn't mean they couldn't fit.
Yeah.
And we don't really know the whole status of this world yet, because it was only a first issue. So, yeah, he's doing stuff here. He's world building, and he's given us big players, but he hasn't really delved into anything yet, because he can't. And there's going to be, you know, after the four issues of this, there's going to be solo books. And then he said after a year, there's going to be a fourth solo book. So he's got a long-term plan for what he's doing here.
Yeah, and I'm not really saying this is a bad book, but I'm saying it's par the course for Warren Ellis to have a slow start.
Yeah, and the thing to remember with this is he's not doing his slow start for one series that's going to go on. He's doing a slow start because he has to establish an entire new universe. Like, we know nothing about this. And he's basically got four issues to tell us everything we need to know, and then we're going to split off into three different comics that are going to develop this world and the characters in it more. This is a really big project, if you think about it. You know, this isn't like a Vertigo line, where we just do all these different comics and none of them are connected and they all do their separate thing. This is, you know, I'm creating an entire world and then I'm going to create an entire group of characters to populate it with. He's obviously not sticking with the old versions of the characters. Engineer was not like this in the other books she was in. So, you know, it's different. Engineer actually, I believe, was in the Stormwatch book in the New 52. So she got moved over too.
Yeah, and I wonder if with all the Rebirth stuff, they explain how they crossed over, or it's just a thing that they don't think
they will.
Yeah, because I was proposing that either Apollo and Midnighter are going to die, and then they're magically going to show up in the Wildstorm continuity, or they're going to do something in Rebirth where they're doing multiple universes, and that's how they cross over. It seems like there's nothing definite as far as it may be their own imprint, but it feels like the Young Animal stuff where it still sort of feels like it's happening in the mainline.
Because it is. Because, like, that Mother Panic book takes place in Gotham.
Yeah.
So that is still in the DC universe. This is completely separate. And I don't think I want this to ever cross over. I want it to be completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
It works better that way. Like, maybe if you do your big universe-altering storyline and you eventually get some big guns in this series, like if they bring the Doctor in or whatever, then they can do something small to acknowledge it. But I would not cross this over. For this to work, this has to be separate. This has to be Warren Ellis's playground. The minute you start crossing it over, you're going to water it down. Because these characters, the way they are presented, they do not fit with what DC is doing right now. It's much more serious. It's a lot more grounded. Even with the weird sci-fi stuff, it's still more grounded than what we see in DC. And I don't want them to cross. I want this to be separate. When I'm reading these books, I want to pretend this is a different publisher. That's how it's going to work.
That's how it should be, but I wouldn't be shocked if we like you said, we saw new 52 characters that nobody's using show up in this Wildstorm universe.
They don't need them, though. Wildstorm has so many fucking characters. And they don't need to be characters who are, like, hugely over. Because with Warren Ellis, you draw from a different fan base than your traditional superhero books. And as we've already seen, he's changed existing characters. He can continue to introduce old characters, make them different, and for people like me who read a lot of Wildstorm, we'll be like, oh, that's cool. But you don't need to, like, you know, take unused DC character number 57 and put him in this book. Like, I don't think that adds anything.
Yeah, I would certainly agree as far as that is concerned, but it's one of these things where we'll just play it by ear. Like, Young Animal is clearly, it's its own imprint, but it still takes place in that universe. And I get the feeling Gerard Way gets to do whatever he wants with that. So I think we're going to have to wait in coming issues to see if this is a clean-cut, new continuity, or it's sort of the Young Animal approach where it is and it isn't part of the DC mainline.
Well, this definitely isn't a part of the DC universe, because currently, like, Io doesn't exist in the DC universe. Mm. And with them talking about how Marlowe's company has changed, like, the world, that obviously isn't going on in the DC universe. This is definitely a separate universe. And, like, by DC's modern, you know, structure of worlds, like, yeah, it's in their multiverse somewhere. I don't know what Earth it is. It's Earth 53 or something. But it's not going to cross over with storylines.
No.
And it wouldn't go with the storyline anyway, even the Dr. Manhattan stuff. Like, if he's behind the current DC, if he was behind the new 52, if he was the one who was really behind it, he created that world. But this is a new thing. How he wouldn't fit into it. No. Even though this, in a first issue, this felt more like a Watchmen book than any of the DC books. So this would be more something you would think he would create if he was trying to create something that he recognized.
Yeah, and like I said, my overall review of this isn't, it's not bad, but it's just a slow start. So I wouldn't say this is a great book. I wouldn't say I like this necessarily. But with that said, I'm going to keep reading it, and I, with the impression that eventually it's going to get a lot better.
Well, yeah, because it's rare that you've liked a Warren Ellis first issue, but it's also rare that there's a Warren Ellis book that you don't like in the end. So, yeah, I was happy with this, though. It hit what I wanted it to hit, and it's got the appeal for me of, like, ooh, when are we going to see another Wildstorm character, and what are they going to do to him?
Exactly. All right, that's going to do it for the DC portion of the show. Let's move on to Image with God Country, Issue 2, writer Donnie Cates, art by Jeffrey Shaw.
This is a really strong second issue, I thought. The first issue, I mean, we liked it. It was kind of goofy.
It was a cool bait and switch, and this continued it with the idea that the sword is enchanted, and he was an elderly man who had Alzheimer's, and he was forgetting things here and there, but somehow the sword is able to return him his memories as well as his physical capabilities.
Yeah, and this, the big guy we saw at the end was the god of war. Mm-hmm. And this thing is like the god of blades. Mm-hmm. The sword he holds is the guy explained it to him like it's like Excalibur. It's not like Excalibur. It is Excalibur. It's also, and then he listed a bunch of other, mythical swords. He's like, it's all of them.
It's not a sword. It's the sword.
Yeah. It's the sword. It is the god of blades. And he was supposed to recover this blade. However, the sword talked to the god of war and told him like, nope, this is my guy. He's like, I'm staying with him. And he's like, well, do you want to give it up or do you want to keep it? And he's like, I want to keep it. I can't give this up.
Actually, here's the thing. He's like, I don't really care about the blade. If you could give me back my memories, I'd happily give you the sword. And then the thing he says, well, I can't do that. I don't have those powers. He's all, well, then I can't give up the sword. And the thing is, not only is he remembering stuff like his wife, you know, all the good memories they have, but then he also remembers her dying. Obviously, he's of the opinion, he's like, you know what? These aren't the best memories, but they're my memories and I want to keep them. And more importantly, not only does it return his, you know, his mental capacities, but he's also able to get superpowers because him getting the sword blew up the house. But because he has the enchanted sword, he was able to put the house back together.
Yeah, he put the house back together exactly as it was, which,
yeah, and
you know,
even the son,
their
son
kid.
The son commented, is like, if you're going to put the house back together, can't you at least, like, spruce it up a bit? He's like, you literally put it back the way it was.
Well, yeah, because he wanted everything the way he remembered it. Like,
and in your, yeah, I know you were getting it. There's this one scene where they put the house back together, but the family's already in the house. And it was kind of, you know, it's a little jarring, but the little girl's like, again.
Yeah, she thought it was pretty cool. Well, she's really young. But, yeah, so he tells the God of War he's not going to give the sword up. So the God of War goes back to the of old ways or something. He had some term for him. He goes back to like the leader of the gods, I guess. And he's like, yeah, well, the sword, you know how it is. It already found someone and it's like bonded to him. And he's like, oh, well, did he have a message? And he's like, yes. And it was in his Texas. He's from the Kingdom of Texas. And it was in their terms. He said, come and get it.
Awesome.
So he has put a threat out to the king of gods to come get your fucking sword if you want it. He ain't giving it up. So it was, I mean, he's a good character. He's not an overly original character, but you know, he's likable in his somewhat odd, honored old man ways. Mm-hmm. And the, it's, you know, the of the book is the juxtaposition between this and these gigantic cosmic powers that he sort of put himself against.
This, I love Jason Aaron's Mighty Thor, but this sort of reads like how Thor should have been written.
It's gimmicky than Thor, because Thor is, like, Thor actually is a god, and this is about a human.
No,
who,
I mean the current Thor series with Jane Foster.
Oh, yeah. But it's still, you know, superhero being a superhero sort of thing, and this is a normal guy being so much more. But really, the only reason he wants it, like, he has no desire for power. He just doesn't want to lose himself to the disease. Like, he... And like you said, he would have given it up. Like, he would have had no problem giving it up if the guy could have fixed him. But he, you know, if you lose the sword, you'll go back to the way you were. And he's like, well, I can't have that. That was shit.
And it's like the sword had bonded to him. But like he said, he's not married to the thing. But if he wants his memories, he's going to hold on to the sword.
Yeah. And I don't think he can put the sword down. Like, I think. Has to hold
yeah,
it.
There was this even this funny sequence where he regained his memories, and obviously the granddaughter is like, "Grandpa," and she went to him and she hugged him. But the father of the kid was like, "Dad, I'm glad you remember everything, and it's like I'm glad your daughter and your granddaughter."
Can you maybe put the fucking giant sword down while you're touching my daughter?
Yeah,
because I'm a little worried about that. Yeah, no, this is good though. This is actually very good. It's, you know, it's well written. The art's good. It's got the neat tie between these very normal looking people. Even the main character, like the grandpa, he's like kind of a fat old guy, but then he's holding this giant fuck off magic sword. And the thing looks absolutely ridiculous. Like, it's huge and.
For the nerds in the audience, and if you're listening to a comic book podcast, I have to imagine that's all of you. But imagine like Cloud Strife's Buster Sword. It's like
yeah, but it's like made of energy.
Yeah. So it's this series is a surprise hit. Obviously, you know, we used to have the gimmick where we'd always read the number one Image books that come out. But the thing is, eventually we had too many books, so we stopped doing that. But luckily, we had a light week when this came out, the first issue of this. So I recommended we check it out, and this is a really good series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like this.
All right. Another series that I really like, Kill or Be Killed, Issue 6, writer Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips. Did you like this? I know the last issue of Kill or Be Killed you didn't much care for, and I put it over, but I was curious to see what you thought of it.
This book gave it more of a story, but I'm just not feeling this.
Mm.
And I don't know why. I mean, it was well written. I think a part of it is I hate the main character. I do not like him at all, and it's kind of tough to read a book when I don't like the main character. He doesn't really have much of a supporting cast, but all of the supporting cast he's had, I dislike. I don't like anyone in this book. Like, the girl he's with right now, it's like, she's a chick who wasn't into him because he was a pussy, but then when he became kind of a badass, suddenly she's into him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, So I don't like her. I don't like him. And I think that's my problem with the book. Now, in this, they introduced a cop who kind of put together that there's apparently like a vigilante serial killer. I'm going to keep reading the book because I like her. And in the backups, they said like she's a character that he's been waiting to introduce. She's going to be a big deal.
I feel like she's the ethical anchor in the series.
Yeah, and so she's the only likable character. So her I like, and I'll keep reading the book for her, because we finally have a character who's kind of heroic, as opposed to the main character who's kind of a douchebag who just wants to kill.
Mm.
But, yeah, he was narrating, but he was basically pointing out everything that was going on with her and her desire to catch this mysterious vigilante murderer. And he said, you know, I didn't know about this at the time. Because what happened in the last issue was he went to kill the guy in the bathroom. And then
the police who were in there showed up and there was a big standoff, and that's how the last issue ended.
Yeah, and he ended up he didn't shoot the cop. He shot the door because he pointed out like a shotgun is actually much more effective in people.
Mm.
It's a lot bigger than a handgun. So he shot at the door, and then he screamed that he had a bomb because he. I don't really know what New York City police procedure is, but I'm pretty sure when somebody has a bomb, procedure isn't to run into the fucking room.
Exactly, and that's what he said. He had the shotgun. He already knew, okay, that's going to buy him some time, because if he has a shotgun and he's there shooting it out with the cop's going to be a little bit more hesitant than if he just has a pistol. So he already knew that, but then he thought very quickly. He's like, well, okay, the fact that I have a shotgun bought me a little time. The cops are already thinking, who's this psycho with the shotgun? He's like, okay, I'll play it up. I'll even threaten that I have a bomb. That way I can make my way out of the bathroom window.
Yeah, he snuck out through the window because he knew they wouldn't come in if he said he had a bomb. So he snuck out through the window. He hooked up with the ex-girlfriend, and he's apparently going to go back to the murdering. Like, he hasn't had any desire to stop. Even talked about how, you know, it's not, none of this stuff is scary to him anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it just kind of feels normal now. He's a murderer. And, but now we have the story, because the book really had no story to it. It was just like, here's a guy and something happened and now he thinks he has to kill people. But there was nowhere to go with that. It was just like, you know what, every issue he's going to find a new person to kill and then he's going to kill him. Well, now he's got a cop coming after him for what he's doing. So it's got a little bit more of a something to run through.
And even the cop in this, they go into her backstory, and basically she was a cop that was just hired on the force because sort of they needed, I guess, it came off of like a little bit of like affirmative action. They needed a woman police officer, so.
No, it wasn't so much that. It was, there was like corruption or something, and like there was a new commissioner or something, and he basically had to bring in all new people to show that he was serious about change, and she was one of the new people who got brought in.
And the thing is, even though she was there to be a police officer, she was there sort of as a political thing, so she never really got super comfortable with the people there because they sort of treat her as an outsider.
Well, yeah, because she got brought in under this new regime, and she thought because of that she has to like work harder, like she has to try more to prove her worth.
Yeah, and even though she's making legitimate points on this killer, the police chief is just blowing her off. It's like, whatever, you're just trying to make a name for yourself, and it's like, you know why you're here. Don't make any waves.
Nobody takes her seriously, even though the stuff she's bringing up makes sense. And they're like, okay, because some people, one of them even brought up, he's like, you think the fact that criminals are getting shot means that there's someone like serial killing criminals? He's like, the fact of the matter is, most people who get shot are criminals. The criminals, and they deal with other criminals, and they're more likely to kill people. That is why most people who die are criminals. You're looking at nothing. Then, you know, the cops, he didn't kill the cops, so they had a sketch of, you know, this person in, you know, with a ski mask, and this matched the description from other things. So it's like, okay, now I got something. And they were, like the story in the newspaper about the possible vigilante murderer.
And it's perfect that she's dealing in a scenario like this, because they go into her backstory, and it's a perfect storm for someone like her, someone who, you know, who grew up in the system, who didn't have parents, who went from, you know, foster parent to, you know, orphanage, and she just having to grow up with just, you know, just apathy from government officials, because it's like they're there and they're supposed to do what they're supposed to do. Like, but at the same time, she kind of felt like growing up her entire life that she just dealt with working with government workers, just apathy. And the thing she mentioned, that she was never going to give up. She was just going to always overcome all that. And now that she's in a scenario where she's a police officer, she's dealing with a bunch of, you know, officers that don't take her seriously. It's like, what she dealt with her entire life, so she's right at home.
Oh, by the way, speaking of government apathy, at your and Lauren's recommendation, we started watching Parks and Recreation. And fucking Ron is my hero.
I told you.
Greatest character on television. Just straight fucking libertarian working in local government. I love him.
I even have the quote from Kill or Be Killed. It's a special kind of lazy, unique to government work, that inability to care. There's just something about being part of the system that you just feel like giving up, I guess.
I love him.
I knew you would like this. I read this before you, and I'm like, okay, I know you've been kind of touch and go with Kill or Be Killed, but I think you might like this issue.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good... But she still... My problem with her was she still believes in the system, like it can work. Whereas I believe it'll never work. So, but you know, I admire people who believe in things.
There you go.
So,
all right, let's move on to our last Image title: Walking Dead 164. Writer Robert Kirkman, art by Charlie Adlard.
Negan and Rick bonded in this issue.
I tweeted, but unfortunately, this is the week that George the Animal Steel passed away, but I'm like, can we have a Mega Powers handshake with Rick and Negan?
I think the thing is, Rick doesn't like him, and he shouldn't. Negan's a giant dick. He doesn't like him, but he's starting to come around to the fact that perhaps he has changed. Maybe. Like, he tried to have a serious talk with him, where, like, they're trapped in this house because of all of the zombies outside. And Negan's like, well, as long as they're trapped here, what's the worst thing you've done since this all started? And, like, Rick won't talk to him. He's just desperately trying to get something out of Rick, and Rick won't talk to him. And he talks to him, he's like, the worst thing I ever did was, he never dealt with his wife. Like, his wife got turned and he didn't kill her. And I guess he regrets that. That he never killed his wife himself, because it thought, you know, at the time he thought, you know, there might be something more to the zombies than they're just monsters sort of thing. So he talked to him about that, and then they were finally, like, the other groups, they'd kind of thinned out the herd a little bit that was outside. So he thought, okay, so we're, you know, we got to leave here now. It's time to go out and kind of clean up, because the herd's thinning. And Rick goes to go out with him, and he's like, no. He's like, I'm going to go out. You're going to stay here and stay alive, because I'm not going to carry your fucking slow ass around. Because he thought Rick was kind of slowing him down. And he's like, you should stay safe. I'm going to take care of this. So he goes out to fight. In effect, he was protecting Rick again. Mm-hmm. You know, he was basically trying to convince Rick that they're more similar than he thinks. Like, you might think I'm this evil asshole, but I'm really not that bad. Like, everything I did for this reason. He's like, one of my problems was, he's like, everybody was so weak. And I eventually started to see them, you know, the same as the zombies, basically. Like, I couldn't respect these people for how weak they are. And once I started seeing them like that, he's like, everyone I killed, it didn't really mean anything to me. Like, I didn't understand why they deserved to live.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a lot easier to, like, make people into your slaves, given that, because they themselves anyway, and that pissed me off. But he goes off, and they're, like, I guess they're, somebody, the other thing was, somebody found Eugene's, like, radio equipment, mm-hmm. which I don't know if that's a problem or not. Like, I don't know if they have rules about that. I don't think he was talking first. Like, I don't think they do that, because their attack plan wouldn't really be affected by anything Eugene told them. Like, they just went at him with a shit ton of zombies. And he never gave location or anything out. Like, they'd agreed to that on the phone or on the calls. So that was fine. But they did make note of the fact that, like, they were in Eugene's house and they found this stuff. So that could be something.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the stuff with the zombies is they're trying to drive them out to the... Like, they're trying to do the lemming deal with them.
Awesome.
Where they run them out to sea, and then they'll just keep going. The problem with zombies at sea is, and I only know this from World War Z, is even in World War Z, you know, they won the zombie war, but there were still a shit ton of zombies underwater. Because they just kind of sink to the bottom of the sea, but then jump on shores and shit. Because zombies can't swim, but they can walk. And in that, it was like, you know, they don't, like, seawater should decay the zombies faster, but for some reason they didn't.
Also, if they're going to sink to the bottom of the sea, wouldn't the pressure that alone to also kill them?
They thought that, but they didn't know for sure, because humanity at that point wasn't really in a position to go that deep. So they didn't know if the pressure got them, but they knew that, like, you know, salt water can be caustic, so it would have broken a body down quicker, but with them, it didn't break them down quicker. Now, in the Walking Dead world, the zombies do decompose. Like, they've shown them, like, the first zombies are all pretty much done, because they just decompose so much that, you know, they couldn't walk anymore and that kind of thing. Like, the plague doesn't preserve them in the Walking Dead world. So, yeah, driving them to the sea might actually work.
But then here's my question with that. Aren't they mixed up with the Whispers as well? Or is there so many zombies that even with the Whispers trying to influence them, that won't do anything?
Well, I think most of the Whisperers fled, and it was just this huge herd. Because they were originally in the first attack, like, they snuck into the zombie herd too, and they were just smoking the Whisperers from within the herd. There weren't that many of the Whisperers. That was always the thing. They weren't a huge group. Their strength came from using the zombie herds to take care of stuff. But again, in this issue, they showed that even when presented with these ridiculous, overwhelming odds, Rick's group still wasn't beaten. They were hurt, but, you know, their town got fucked up. Their gates got destroyed, but they still weren't beaten. They were still able to rally and kind of beat back the threat. And this was the biggest threat they'd ever had. They had people who they beat. They had a gigantic herd of zombies, which they've able to disperse and kind of lead away. The fact that they're more capable has not hurt the Walking Dead comic. It makes sense. It's the longer you live in a world like this, the better you would be equipped to deal with it. It's just, you again come to the eventual problem of what can be a threat to these people at this point. The only thing we haven't dealt with, and I'm really shocked they haven't done it yet, is you assume some form of the government survived. And if you have that, then you assume some form of the military survived. And we have to get that eventually. And I mean, they could do the thing where, like, they're evil, like the 28 days later thing, or the Day of the Dead thing, where, you know, the military survived, but they're all douchebags. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, like, an organized army is the only thing that I could see would be a threat to Rick's group now. They've beaten so many groups of evil humans that they just don't come off threatening anymore.
And I think that's the reason why they chose to focus this time in the title on just the zombies. Because they'd done that gimmick with the people so many times.
Well, I mean, they still had the Whisperers, and they were different. Like, they were different from what he's... They've gone through so many groups of evil humans that they had to come up with something different, and they came up with it. But at this point, it's like you have to be running out. Like you had another governor with Nagin, and they went a different way with Nagin. They're kind of turning him to not be so much of a villain, we think. Where do you go after that? Like, you have these charismatic sociopaths who end up running these groups and making them all super evil. You can only do that so many times. Like, you can't really do that again. And now you've got, you know, the gimmick with the Whisperers is they live with the zombies. Mm-hmm. And they don't behave like normal people anymore. Even though really they are like normal people. That was the undercurrent of it. So what do you, you know, where do you go with human enemies from that? The next story eventually in Walking Dead is them finally going to be, okay, we're safe. We're not threatened by humans anymore. We need to start killing every fucking zombie. Mm-hmm. Like, that's got to be the story eventually. Like, we need to work out a way to finally kill all the zombies. That's, you know, that's what it's going to have to be.
The problem with that is that is such a end game thing. It's like, okay, you do that, and then what else? Where do you
end this fucking book? It's at like issue 160 something.
It's this meal ticket, homie.
I know, but how long does it need to go? Like, you have the TV show. You're still making money elsewhere. How long can he write fucking zombie stories?
As long as people keep buying it.
Yeah, but I mean, as an artist, you eventually get bored. I mean, the guy who did Fables, I know he was an older guy, but he never intended Fables to go on as long as it did. And eventually it ended. So, Kirkman, he has, you know, he's got Invincible. He has other properties.
Actually, he recently ended Invincible.
Oh.
Yep.
He wants to do something new sometime. Maybe he wants to write other people's creations after doing his own for so long.
I think he recently started a new series with Image.
Well, but I'm saying, like, there's probably money in Kirkman going and writing a big Marvel or DC. Because he is a name, and he hasn't really... I think he's done work for the big publishers, but nothing.
Yeah, his other series is Outcasts.
Yeah, and I haven't read that. I didn't read Invincible. I never liked Invincible. Like, people spoke really highly of it. I read about the first 10 issues of it, and it never grabbed me. I've always intended to go back and read it. It felt like he was trying too hard to do, like, a darker superhero book. Mm. And, I mean, for my money, like, both The Boys and Irredeemable were better than anything he was doing in Invincible. So I just, it never did anything for me. But, you know, maybe I didn't give it a fair shake.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Marvel Comics with Captain America, Sam Wilson, issue 19, writer Nick Spencer, art by Paul Renard.
This story is continuing to go in a very dark direction.
Well, it's what he's been doing so far, and it's been his... Here's the thing, remember what we said between this and the Nighthawk book? They're telling very similar stories, but the Nighthawk book is doing it in a more serious way, but now it seems like with that book gone...
Yeah, Nighthawk's gone, so he's like, okay.
I'm gonna tell the story that he was telling. He's like, I'm still gonna have the super cops in there, but now it's gonna be a much more grounded, serious story now.
Yeah, and this one was, you know, Rage gets arrested, and, he Falcon goes to him, or Cap Falcon goes to him. And he's like, hey, let us get you some help here. And he's like, no, he refuses all help. He won't let them get him like a high-powered attorney.
So I'm going to use my public defender. And he's like, I'm going to be a martyr, basically.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to show how the system fails. So I don't want, you know, your high-priced, you know, I don't want She-Hulk coming in here and representing me. He's like, I want the public defender like anyone else in my situation would get. And we're going to show them how they get fucked. So Falcon's still feeling pretty confident because he's like, well, I've got the security footage of,
he's like, oh, that's remissible. We can't use that.
It's not inadmissible because we can't verify anything that you got from this footage. And, you know, they point out like the jury, you know, it's from a poorer part of town, but the jury's almost all white. The judge he got was like a judge who's known for being hard on criminals, which they basically just meant he convicts damn near everyone. Like the deck was stacked against him. And the piece of evidence that basically proved his innocence was ruled inadmissible. So he gets fucked. He gets found guilty. And predictably, this causes the people to get really fucking pissed off. And apparently a riot has started. With a little kid, by the way, like I don't know how old he was, like 13, 14. He makes a Molotov cocktail and goes and throws it at I don't remember if it was the courthouse or.
I think it was just some government building, but the whole thing was some little kid saw the results of the trial. He got upset. He got some like face paint and he painted himself up like rage and then he got a Molotov cocktail and he threw it at a government building.
Yeah, which indicates, you know, riot's gonna start because I fucked. Like the footage that Falcon had, like that got released to the media, so everybody knew about it except the people in the jury. Like they weren't allowed to see it.
My favorite part is Falcon trying to clear Rage's name. He's you know, since Spencer's writing it, he's like, oh, there's some Speed guy involved, and of course it had to be Speed Demon from Superior Foes Run.
Yeah, and he caught him, and he was like, okay, so the only way I'm going to get him off is that I catch the guy who really did this. And he did catch him, but by the time he brought him to the courthouse, you know, they said, well, the jury deliberated for like 5 minutes.
It's like less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, and they already found him guilty, so it's too late. And it's like, oh, that sucks. Like, even when he tries, he can't make it work. So, yeah, he got railroaded. He got fucked. Rage did. And by the way, the AmeriCops we saw, they do appear to be human. I thought they were robots. Racist robot cops, they're not.
I think the public doesn't know they're robots. Which is the same reason why I'm not too keen on this title.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're very different. You respect authority and I don't. Yeah. So I love this story and I want to see where it goes, but I don't know where it's going to go. And it might get sidetracked by Cap, you know, being evil and taking over, having Hydra take over the world.
I'll say this much. This series is starting to make me uncomfortable, but when I have to put my foot down, I will put my foot down, but it's not gotten to that point yet.
But you have to admit it is a well-written story. Like everything out, so it makes sense.
I'm shocked this book doesn't get more pub, but yeah, it's certainly a well-written book. It's very timely. Well, I wouldn't say timely nowadays, but maybe like a year ago was timely. But
yeah, I still think one of the problems is it's Falcon is the least interesting thing in this book. Like the plot that's going on, really, it doesn't directly involve him. Like he's involved in that, you know, they've got the take back the shield and you're not the real Captain America thing. And that's kind of there, but that's been sidetracked by what's going on with Rage, which is the core of the story now. I mean, eventually you need to, does Cap like go full on and just beating the shit out of the other cops. I don't think he's going to do that.
Well, I don't, let's see. He might, considering what Spencer's doing with this, the Rogers book, it might be fashionable to turn on the government at that point.
Yeah, but are they really going to continue? Like, shouldn't this storyline be over by the time Hydra takes over the United States or whatever is going
to
happen?
Yeah, but you forget this is a monthly book, and that's supposed to be a big summer event. So, and
yeah, I guess they could, you know.
We're already in February. So.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep. All right. Clones Conspiracy, Issue 5, writer Dan Slott, art by Jim Chung.
Kane got fixed. Anna Maria got fixed. Auto Clone is dead. And Ben Reilly is apparently dead, but we know that's not going to stick.
Yeah.
Gwen Stacy Clone is dead. She sacrificed herself so Peter could save the day.
So the big thing they were teasing the entire time was them bringing back Uncle Ben. They never pulled the trigger on it.
Yeah, Uncle Ben never came back. And also, we don't have any answers how there's going to be a Ben Reilly book, because he kind of went out a villain and apparently died also. So we weren't really given an answer as to how they're going to give him a book.
If it sounds like we're railroading this book and doing a quick review, it's just that there wasn't much to this.
Yeah, I mean, it finished the story. It put us back in the status quo, as far as we know.
And yeah,
like, all the clones and Ben Reilly are gone. The people who went into New You for, like, improvements, like, apparently they saved their bodies.
So, and then some of the people that were clones somehow survived, like Robbie. He managed to just make it out just fine.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, he's a clone, but for some reason why he didn't die when they did the reversal of the pitch. And it's like, okay, it didn't affect some people because they need them for storylines. It's like, okay, then what? I think this is a good story, not a great story. I think part of the problem with this, it was so short, it was only 5 issues. I felt like there was The story was really weak, but also I felt like
ran through the Spider-Man book too, so it wasn't just 5 issues.
Yeah, I think the thing is Slott had a really good story here. Just the ending wasn't super strong.
Yeah, I wish they would have given like a hint, like, you know, like the lab blows up, but then you see like the Jackal mask popping out or something.
And
like,
here's the
you
thing.
Know just.
They killed off Doc Ock, but we know he's coming back, so.
Yeah, and they didn't show them die either. Because the ending with Doc Ock fighting Ben Reilly was like they were fighting and they had the cellular degeneration thing was going on.
But they indicated
that Ben, like, you know, you were supposed to be like the perfected clone, but it looks like you're degrading too.
I will say this, there was that instance where Ben Reilly was messing it up Anna Maria, and that's why Doc Ock chose to fight. But there was that one instance where at the end of this book where Anna Maria was like, oh, perfect body, huh? Oh, that was great.
Yeah, but they didn't really set much up was the thing, and I like, we know something's coming out of this, so.
It was 20 pages. It pretty much just, okay, this is the ending of it, and it felt all very rushed. And this was fine, but it wasn't bad, but at the same time, it's like, okay, if it sounds like we're railroading this, it's just like, there wasn't much to it. It was about 20 pages.
And yeah, it ended.
That's pretty much it.
I have nothing else to say about this.
All right, let's move on to our next book, Mighty Thor, Issue 12, writer Jason Aaron, art by Russell Dederman.
The Shi'ar gods decided to have a competition with the weak god of thunder because she's not a real god. They had to show her how real gods behave.
To be fair, so, it's not like they were these goofy characters. At first, Jane as Thor tried to fight them and she...
Oh, they completely outclassed her.
Yeah, so it's not like these are just goofball gods who aren't legit, who rule over the Shi'ar people, and they're just, you know, they're just shams. It's like, no, they're legit. Jane tried to fight them, and she very quickly got her butt kicked.
Yeah, so they decided we're going to have, and they were also, they were pissed off at Gladiator, because he, like, kind of apologized to her about what was going on.
He was trying to be nice to Jane Foster. He's like, I'm sorry, but they're the gods. I kind of have to do what they say, and they turn on Gladiator. He's like, how dare you apologize on our behalf?
Yeah, they're like, we never should have had one of your people be the leader of the Empire. You're weak. And so they start out their challenges. And the first one is, like, you got 5 points for every person who prays to you. And what they did, they lost this challenge and pointed out they hated this challenge. Because their plan was they were going to cause, like, a big tidal wave to come in at the beach and murder everyone and destroy a town. And the people would pray to them.
No matter what happens, you know, to the Shi'ar, we could kill a bunch of them, and you'd think they'd lose faith in us. If anything, when we do stuff like this, we tend to get more worshippers.
Yeah, so they tried that, and Thor's plan was, instead of, you know, she's not horrifically evil like these gods are, so what she did was she went down and stopped the tidal wave from coming in. She ended up winning the competition. Like, I'm going to name my kid after you, and I'm going to...
I'll say a prayer, and she was sort of
I'm going to say a prayer to you.
she very much quickly be like, no, okay, he's like, I may be the god of thunder, but I'm not a god. Just like, please, can you not pray to me?
Yeah, but they were going to do it anyway, so she won the first competition. So, I actually, this storyline has some legs.
Oh, I wish I could tell you where this is going, but it's gonna
end. Is it gonna stop?
No, it's gonna keep going, and it's gonna end. It's gonna go in a direction I'm very much a big fan of, but I won't spoil it for you.
Okay. Well, it's just they're continuing the competition. Apparently, the sub story was Volstagg met with the Council of Realms and was kind of filibustering. He was trying to get them to go to war against the Shi'ar. And they did not want to go to war because Asgard didn't help them out in the war with Malekith. And one of them actually said, like, I'm not voting for any war until we declare war against Malekith because he's kind of fucking shit up. And I'm like, yeah, go with that person. But they weren't really voting with it. So Volstagg was kind of filibustering by continually talking about what various things he did and all the foods he ate during these adventures, which is pretty funny, actually, because he was waiting for Jane Foster to arrive. He was trying to kill time. So he just kept listing off things he ate. And Volstagg's meals are very big, so it was taking him a long time.
So he was able to filibuster on just on what he'd eaten,
yeah,
on that day
in these on these various adventures. But he ate so much that it was taking forever, and sometimes he couldn't remember what he ate, so he had to pause to remember. I thought that was pretty cute. I'm a big Volstagg fan. He's my favorite of the Warriors Three.
And if you're wondering why I won't tell Alex where it goes, it's because he doesn't like looking at solicitations.
Yeah, because they spoil, and I don't like spoilers.
Okay.
I want to be surprised where the story goes.
There you go.
So, yeah. Good issue.
Yeah, very good issue. All right, let's move on to our next title, Old Man Logan, issue 18, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Andre Sorrentino.
Okay, so we sort of found out what was going on. The Brood, Jean Grey, and Iceman had also gone up to space to help Logan out.
Can I say where my mind immediately thought of when I first saw the Brood with Jean Grey?
Yes.
Okay, let me paint you a picture. The Brood took over Jean Grey, a psychic.
Uh-huh.
Queen of Blades.
Oh, you thought it was like Kerrigan?
Yeah, like from StarCraft.
We are going to have Kerrigan.
I was like, oh, yes, that's exactly what the first thing my mind immediately went to. I was like, is he doing Queen of Blades? Is he doing StarCraft? That's awesome.
He did not, though, because the story ended here.
Yeah.
But that's where the mind fuckery was coming from. It was because he did take for a psychic, a powerful psychic. So, but during this, you know, in his wasteland stuff, it was this kid of Hulk. And it turned out, we found out that Logan found that this was a real thing that happened to him. He found the baby Hulk, and he didn't like take it and raise it. He just kind of left it. Hmm. So it grew up in the wasteland like by itself and ended up becoming a giant douchebag murdering warlord. So he felt actually really bad about this and thought he did something wrong. So now he's declared he has to like get back to the wasteland so that he can undo what he did and save baby Hulk, which is going to be a problem. But if it gives us a story of old man Logan in the wasteland, I have multiple times said I'm much more interested in that than anything he's doing on Earth.
But I say this. Doesn't this mean this is going to bring the old man Logan title to an end if he goes back?
No. They, in fact, if they are going to bring Wolverine back, which they're apparently going to do, then putting old man Logan back in the wasteland opens up a spot for male Wolverine, like OG Wolverine, to come back. And then you can continue this book and just have it take place in the wasteland. You could do that.
Well, considering we've seen the solicitations for the X-Men Gold Team, and they have front and center old man Logan.
Well, he might go back later.
That's true. Or even a worse idea would be he brings the Hulk baby into the current X-Men continuity.
So we could have a male Hulk.
I'll only approve of this if we can have interaction between the baby Hulk and Shogo.
Isn't Shogo dead or something?
No, Shogo's still alive.
Or he went to the future? No. Or did we just see future Shogo?
Future Shogo came from present day 616, but he went back. So the Shogo baby is still part of the X-Men.
Baby the Shogo?
Yes.
Nice.
Alright. Punisher issue 9, record Becky Cloonan, art by Steve.
Steve Dillon, by the way.
I'm looking at Go Collect from that links from Comic List, and they still have it linked as Steve Dillon.
Some of the pages look like Steve Dillon art and some of them didn't. The Punisher was actually barely in this. Like, we saw him at the end. He's going to Canada. But this was mostly about, in the last issue, the female cop. She got captured by Faith, and he took her away. But we found out in this, she knew more about the drug he was taking than he did. So she's basically fucking with him. She's like, hey, you took too much of that drug, so you're going to start hallucinating, and then you're going to start, like, your internal organs are going to start liquefying. Like, apparently if you take too much of this drug, it does horrible things to you and kills you. And it did. It did all the things she said to him, and then it killed him.
Yeah, but the thing she kept holding over him, he's like, look, you have some information I want, so I can give you a quick and painless death, or I can just let you sit there and just let your brain slowly deteriorate.
This drug also makes you kind of crazy, so he wasn't going to give the information up.
Sorry.
What else do you want me to say about this?
No, I'm looking at to see who, because obviously I have Go Collect has Steve Dillon drawing it, but I'm trying to find out from Comixology possibly who drew this.
Or you could look at the comic, which I don't have in front of me now, so I can't.
That's another thing too I didn't think about. But yeah. That's another thing. This also read really fast. But then most of the Punisher books tend to read pretty quick, so they tend to be action intensive.
I mean, it was Face driving around with her until he died. And then Punisher is going to Canada in disguise. Punisher was in another book. Very briefly, and I can't remember what it was now.
Wasn't it Captain America, Sam Wilson?
Yeah, it was Captain America. Yeah, he said to catch Speed Demon, he had to call in some favors. And one of the people he went to find out where Speed Demon was Punisher. Like, they showed, like, Punisher, like, chilling in one of his hideouts, and Falcon came in and talked to him.
Oh, okay, I have the artist now. Matt Horak.
Okay, yeah, because it wasn't Steve Dillon.
The faces were done in sort of like a...
He sort of tried to draw somewhat similar to Steve Dillon, but it was not Steve Dillon. All right. Who is dead.
Spider-Man issue 13, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Sarah Pichelli. Sitting in a Tree, part 3.
I hate his dad. I don't like his dad.
I liked his dad when they did all the stuff in the Ultimates and he was the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. I know you weren't a fan, but me and Dave liked it.
Yeah, he goes to Spider-Gwen's world. He's telling Genki and Goldballs the story. Goldballs got fatter again in this issue, by the
really?
Way.
Really? I thought he got more muscular.
No, he was fatter. He had more of a belly. So did Genki. Well, not Genki's always fat. I'd brought it up before, so I thought I'd mention it here. Okay, so... he's in a club with Spider-Gwen and sees his dad, but his dad smacks him because it's his dad from another universe. It's not really his dad. They were there to see if his dad was there, and he apparently was not. So they had a fight with him, and he had super armor on, so it actually was a bit of a fight. They end up on a rooftop. And the cops come and they like tell them to take the masks off and stuff. And they can't fight the cops. So they use their little dimensional teleporters to teleport away. And they like teleported to another place and found out that wasn't right. So then they teleported again and they were like behind the door of where the cops were.
My favorite is one of the universes they show up to. It's like Apocalypse and he's riding a giant scorpion.
Yeah. Like it's a world where Apocalypse took over and rides scorpions. So they quickly teleported out of that and then teleported into the door behind where the cops are. Okay. So the cops thought they disappeared. So they were all good there.
But the thing is, in the Spider-Gwen universe, apparently his dad is a crime boss known as the Scorpion.
Yeah. So, but he still hasn't found his dad.
No.
So we're still with that storyline. The thing with this book is I like Miles and I like Genki and I even kind of like Goldballs in this because he's not trying to be a superhero because his superpowers are fucking lame. He makes Goldballs. I'm making the jerk off motion with my hand right now. I fucking hate that character. But, you know, Bendis has to use his characters and desperately try to get them over. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the story continues.
Yeah, there's not much to say. I'm not digging the storyline. I hope it wraps up pretty soon.
I like Spider-Gwen, but, you know.
And, okay, as long as we're talking books, I don't much care for it. Let's talk U.S. Avengers issue 3, right of Al Ewing, art by Paco Medina.
I liked this.
I hate this book.
Really? I put off reading this book because, you know, I told you I kind of stopped the reading the books I don't want to read first. I put off reading this book and I ended up reading it and I actually kind of enjoyed it.
See, here's the thing. Everything you hate about comic books, I usually like comic books, and I felt like this is everything when you hate a comedy book, this is everything you think of. And for me, that's what this book was.
If you want to stop reading this, I won't fight you.
Here's what I'll do. I'll give it one more issue, and then I'll drop it.
Usually my rule is 3 issues.
Because the thing is, but also the thing with this ended. So if the next story arc is really good, I'll I'll continue to read it, but this book is waning interest with me.
The long and short of it is they ended up beating the Gold Skull, and he went back to...
I like how they very easily dispatched him, because he had the giant suit made of gold, but the problem is gold is in fact a very soft metal.
Yeah, which is hilarious when he's like, I got this gold battle armor. And she's like, it's solid gold. It's not gold plated. They're like, gold is a soft metal, retard. And they like the Captain America like grabbed him and like kind of crushed his arm very easily, which, you know, always a problem with these greedy villains. They always got to make that gold armor. And, you know, gold plated would have been fine, but it was solid gold. So they very easily beat him. And he also had diamonds on it and stuff. It was a funny character design, if nothing else.
It's a goofy character just in general.
Yes, very much so.
And it's fine, because that's what this book is supposed to be. It's a very goofy book. Oh, I know why I want to keep reading this book. I remember I saw the solicitation for the next issue. Has one of my recent new favorite characters. Not a boy, but one of my new favorite characters. You remember who it is?
No.
American Kaiju. Do you remember who American Kaiju is?
The soldier who can turn into a giant monster.
Yes, into a giant Godzilla monster with the face painted red, white, and blue. One of the few things that came out of that new Avengers run. Done by Ewing. But yeah, that's why. I couldn't remember why. I was like, why do I want to read the next issue? It's like there was something I was looking forward to. I even needed a screen grab because, you know, I'll post stuff on our Twitter sometimes. And I was like, there was something about this book that made me want to give this book another try. Because it's like, it's a comedy book, but it's a little too goofy over the top for me to take it seriously in any way, shape, or form.
I still don't understand the team. Why is Sunspot, why is he Citizen V?
I don't know.
And he even forgot he was Citizen V for a while in this. It's almost like they're making fun of that.
Yeah. I will say this, that one of my favorite parts when Iron Patriot showed up and she just said, something badass quip. Let's do this.
Yeah, because she's new to the superhero stuff. And at one point, they're like, well, you're shooting lasers. And she's like, it's concussive blasts. I didn't make this suit to fight. I'm not going to kill anyone with it. It's like, okay, fair enough.
All right, from one Al Ewing book to another, Ultimates 2, Issue 4, artist Travel Foreman.
We got a Silver Surfer character in this. Because, okay, so Chaos and Order in a couple issues ago, when they found out that, you know, the universe had been rearranged, they didn't have to be Chaos and Order anymore, so they merged and became Logos. And they are now going around and apparently killing the other cosmic entities. They went to, they were going around and the Queen of Nowhere appears. And they apparently killed her, although they weren't really clear on that. They didn't show it. It comes back to Galactus to deal with the Lifebringer issue. Mm-hmm. And Galactus is like, so there's something wrong with you? Like, you have something inside you. And Logos is like leaking black fluid.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what that means yet. But they apparently succeeded in turning Galactus back into the Devourer of Worlds.
And just in case you were wondering how long that lasted, I'm looking at a article from December 12th, 2015 about Galactus becoming the Lifebringer. So it made it a year plus with Galactus being the Lifebringer.
Well, we don't know if this is permanent, but it did something to Galactus, and then we saw the purple, and he said he hungers. So he may be Galactus again permanent, or maybe not. Meanwhile, the Ultimates were fighting the Troubleshooters, who were not trying to kill them. Well, one of them was trying to kill them. I don't remember his name, but he was trying to kill him. And these are the new universe characters, sort of. They're new versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one was talking about his psi powers, and one of them trapped Blue Marvel or Spectrum, I can't remember who. Spectrum trapped her in her own mind,
mm-hmm.
and he said he was given his powers by a mini white event, which is what gave everyone the powers in the new universe that they created. So they were kind of fighting the Ultimate, and then at one point they said, oh wait, you've reformed the Ultimates? You weren't supposed to do that. And Captain Marvel was quickly like, no, we're dealing with a universe, a threat to the Earth, and that is in Alpha Flight's jurisdiction, and these guys are helping me. That's what happened. But the Troubleshooters did better against the Ultimates than I thought they would.
No, they
didn't really win, but they kind of explained all their different powers, and they had some interesting powers, and they were doing pretty good against the Ultimates, so good on them.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther got a badass moment in this where one of them can, like, control technology and shut off Black Panther's kitty suit, as they called it.
Yes.
But Black Panther is a super badass, so he's there in his underwear and basically said, like, all right, well, I'm still ready to kick some ass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, Black Panther rules. But yeah, the cliffhanger at the end was Galactus is back as Galactus now, which, since Galactus was the one in leading them in their mission against whatever has chained Eternity, that has obviously been, you know, a wrench has been thrown in, because without Galactus, like, they're not really cosmic themselves. They're not powered cosmic. Maybe they'll team up with the Silver Surfer and Dawn. I don't think so.
No, because I like those characters doing their own thing.
Yeah, and they're a little too goofy right now to be involved in this seriousness.
Although, from what I hear, Slott, he has something very sad lined up for the Silver Surfer title.
Oh, well, Silver Surfer would actually have to be published for that to happen, and that book doesn't seem to come out with regularity, from what I've noticed. So I hope he doesn't kill Dawn.
That's not what I immediately thought. I immediately thought, oh, they're going to break up.
They already did that, and then they got back together.
Yeah, but maybe them not getting back together.
That'd be terrible. I love Dawn. She makes that book.
Yeah.
Oh.
God, now you have me thinking they're going to kill Dawn.
Well, there's only two characters in that book, dude. So if something sad happens, it, you know, either Silver Surfer or Dawn is going to die.
Or the dad passes away.
Well, that's sad, but they already did something sad. They had her find her mom, and her mom was a cunt who didn't want her. That was horrible.
Yeah, but she actually likes her dad.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, she finally, like, found her mom, and her mom didn't want her and didn't feel bad about giving her up. And
you're right. The only thing they can do is kill Dawn.
Yeah.
Please don't do it. God, then
don't do it, Dan Slott. That's mean.
Huh?
I said, don't do it, Dan Slott. That's mean. I know a shit ton of people don't read Silver Surfer, but those of us who do like her.
Did I mention when I went to the signing, I'm the only one that brought Silver Surfer?
Yeah. Oh. And, by the way, the art in Ultimates was shit. Like, the cosmic stuff was good. I don't understand how this happened. The cosmic stuff was good. You know, it looked epic. The fights between the superheroes, like, really bad character artwork.
It's been everything like that was kind of ill-defined. I don't know if you noticed, but they've had two sets of different artists drawing this book, and the stuff with the Galactus stuff has always been good.
Yeah, like, whoever does that, if it is a different artist, like, they should do the whole book or do the whole book like that. And I'm not saying the cosmic stuff is better because it's like, you know, oh, this is cosmic stuff, so it's drawn really weird. No, it's just, it's just drawn better. And the character fights were kind of not good.
Here's something interesting as I was looking up this title, because you mentioned something about the artist. And I think it was that CBR had something, but I didn't think anything of it because I was like, I don't know what to think of this. But look at this alternative cover for Ultimate Issue 2. And they've been doing this where they have the sort of pseudo-retro covers.
All right, let me see this. Hang on. I was outside. I got to walk back in.
It looks like something like a vintage cover, but it's obviously Ultimates 2 Issue 4. It looks like an old Silver Surfer cover. But it's not like an old 70s or 60s version. It's like something like out of the 90s, maybe.
Yeah, weird. Why is Silver Surfer on the cover?
Well, because of Galactus.
Okay, but Silver Surfer's not in this.
Yeah, I know, but lately Marvel's been doing that as well with a lot of their variant covers. They'll have like these pseudo-retro covers.
But here's something that has nothing to do with our book.
The Monty Python bit.
Eh. Now for a cover that's completely different.
Yes, what is it? Oh, I thought you were going to tell me something.
No, that's from Monty Python, dude.
Oh, okay. Generation Zero, on our final book from Valiant Entertainment, we have Generation Zero, Issue 7, writer Fred Van Lente, art by Diego Bernard.
So they're in the Heroescape. And they were told that the person behind all this was one of the kids who was hooked up to machines. So the weird futuristic city they're in is powered by dreams of children. Which was weird. They had to go out though because the base they were at was in trouble. But they think they have to get this kid who's somehow behind it all.
Basically.
That was the meat and potatoes of this.
there wasn't much else to go on. I thought this was a weaker issue of Generation Zero.
Yeah. It felt like filler. Like, this was an issue between issues where things happened.
Yeah. But I did like the spoiler little rich girl shows up at the end and now she has superpowers. Presuming to fight the Generation Zero folks.
Yeah, excuse me.
That's basically my review of it as well.
Yeah, I didn't love this. By the way, Valiant announced for 2017 Icons, A New Dawn for Valiant's Greatest Heroes. And they listed Exo Man of War, Faith, Bloodshot, Shadow Man, Harbinger Wars whoop, whoop. 2, beginning in 2017. But Shadow Man.
That's why I said
apparently finally getting a title.
Nice. Yeah, they teased it in that Ninjak book, and we thought, oh, okay, this is going to immediately lead to him getting a solo title, and then nothing came of it.
Yeah, but apparently it is coming. They were just waiting.
All right, there you go. That's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment, next week's books.
I'm a nice man. Yeah, I'm a nice man.
Okay, so I'm now convinced this gimmick of us playing wrestling theme music has actually become, we're just picking the worst wrestling songs ever written.
I initially, I was like, oh, I'm going to play some really cool wrestling songs, and it's like, I would play them, and it's like, Alex would either not know it, or he wouldn't react, so I was like, I got to pick songs that I can get a rise out of Alex now.
I picked, like, fucking Rob Conway's theme and shit, like, we're... Yeah, this is what it's going to be. We're just going to pick the worst shit.
I'm fine with that if that's the gimmick.
I still defend TJ Perkins' theme. I like it. Although apparently everyone hates him. Like, the fans boo him all the time.
Because he's just so generic.
Well, his gimmick is he likes video games.
Yeah, which, you know, for wrestling fans, you think that'd be a good gimmick, but no.
Which is also Xavier Woods' gimmick.
Can I explain to the folks, initially I wanted to go with a cover of this version, but you said, oh no, you can't, you have to go with the real deal. Because initially this is my idea for next week's comics.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are you ready for us to start?
Wait, I was just playing a little bit of it. It's a dramatic piano cover of Billy Gunn's theme. Right.
That's actually pretty win.
I told you.
Okay, so to start, we have the return of Astro City, Astro City 41.
Nice.
And this tells us this is actually the 100th issue of Astro City, and it's a 40-page extravaganza.
Whoa.
Introducing Astro City's most revered hero, the Astronaut. Okay, he's their most revered hero, but I've never heard of him.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. But yeah, big, almost double-sized issue. Not quite, but almost.
Did you skip over Action Comics, or was I just preoccupied?
Oh God, I forgot we're reading that now.
Yeah, see, so.
That was my mistake. I forgot it's the Clark Kent storyline.
Hey, it's okay. That's not okay. Important.
Action Comics, Astro City 41. Did I say we were dropping Blue Beetle?
I don't remember. Honestly, I can't remember. Let's put it under the maybe pile, because
it's the end of a storyline. So let's let this storyline about him fighting a green bug end.
Okay.
And then see if the next storyline's more interesting. Clean Room, number 16. Flash, 17. Hal Jordan, Green Lantern Corps, 15. Mm-hmm. Hellblazer, number 7. Oh God, that's a horrible cover.
Now I have to see this cover now.
It's really bad. There's two covers. The John Cassidy cover, oddly, is bad. Ooh. Yeah, it's bad, isn't it? Justice League of America, number 1.
Not to be confused with the last issue, which was the Rebirth issue.
Yeah. So, there's that. Commandi Challenge, number 2. This one is written by Peter J. Tomasi, who just wrote that Super Sons that we like.
Also, I believe, writes Action Comics as well.
Yes. Teen Titans number 5 and Wonder Woman 17.
Is this the year one stuff, or is this present day stuff that we're getting?
I don't know.
I know, it's so confusing.
I can't keep track. The Truth Part 2. No, this is the present day stuff, but it's with the Wonder Woman in the crazy house.
Oh, okay. I kind of like that.
Which, yeah, it flipped. We like that story. Okay. Sorry, I'm looking at stuff and trying to determine. Oh, wait a minute. What's this? IDW, a Highlander book? Should we try to read this?
Yes.
It's only 5 issues.
Yes. Now I have my outro music.
And we have music queued up.
For our outro now. I can't believe we haven't picked that song yet. I think we had it back in the day.
I'm sure we picked it at some point because I fucking love Queen.
It's a great song. So that's our
who outro. Doesn't though? Is there anyone who doesn't like Queen?
Hitler maybe.
Hitler. Without Hitler would have hated Queen because Freddie Mercury is a homosexual. So good.
I'll tell you what we won't be reading from Image Comic, Curse Words Issue 2.
No, that was not good. But we will be reading Descender number 19.
Nice. As I've been recently been reprimanded by my friend who has this same last name, it's Nguyen. So, I've seen the light.
Oh, he finally told you?
Yeah, I asked him, I was like, okay, I've known you since the second grade, and you've let us pronounce it a certain way. Is it Nguyen or Nguyen? He's like, well, technically it's Nguyen. So I was like, why haven't you corrected us this entire time?
Yeah, my friend on the podcast told me. And I told him he was wrong. Amazing Spider-Man 24. Avengers 4.1, written by the same guy, but the better title. Black Panther, number 11. God, so many re-releases.
I know. Well, it's fine by us. That means fewer books for us to review.
Yeah, but it's so hard to get through Marvel with all these goddamn re-releases. Extraordinary X-Men 19.
Woo!
Hulk number 3. Oh, sorry. Great Lakes Avengers number 5. Yeah, gotta read it before it gets canceled. So Great Lakes Avengers number 5, Hulk number 3.
Wait. Were we gonna skip over? Oh no, this is Hulk. Never mind.
Yeah. Inhumans vs. X-Men number 5.
I confused it with the Asian one.
Yeah. Mighty Captain Marvel number 2. Let's see if it's still good.
We've been there before.
Yeah, first issue is good, and then it goes down the shitter. Scarlet Witch number 15. Wait a minute. Because that storyline ended. Okay, James Robinson is still writing it, so that's fine. So Scarlet Witch 15. Spider-Woman 16. Thanos number 4.
The Porcupine Isn't Dead, your boy.
Yeah. Thunderbolts number 10. Uncanny Avengers number 20. Uncanny Avengers picking up with its big storyline. And Harbinger Renegade 4.
Harbinger Renegade. Let's see how many this puts us to. This actually looks like a really, really, really light list.
Really? I thought it was heavy.
Oh, nope. I'm incorrect. It just looks smaller because I have small text. 26 books.
Oh, we're back to that again.
It's not the 30 onslaught, but I will say this. 26 is about the average. The days of us getting 19, 18, 20 books, that has long since gone.
No, it's not. We had that this week.
No, I'm saying it goes with this week, and I mean it goes with next week because we got 26 books this week.
Darn it!
Yeah, I mean they'll be good, but it's just the volume.
No, it's okay. I'm okay with it.
Exactly. All right, that's gonna do it for this week's show. So, from all of us at HeavGuard.com, thanks for checking in, listening out the show, and as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.